waiting all week for this, and here it is. The Illegal Curve radio show starts now. Here comes 2 hours of hard-hitting hockey talk, and here's your host, Drew the Bear Mindell.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us tonight at www.ustream.tv/IllegalCurve, good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve radio show. Joined in studio this Wednesday evening by my three good friends. To the left of me, Richard Pollock. To the right of me, Ezra Ginsberg. And the man behind the R desk who's operating and making us all look as good as we can on Ustream, Michael Remus. Good evening, gentlemen, and welcome to the program.
Drew, great to have you back on this side of the glass.
It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah,
it's glad to be back in the room with you boys.
It's good to have you back.
Yes. You know, I want to make sure we have to keep the chips away from Ezra. They're a little too close to him right now.
I know.
The cheeseburger flavor chips.
Are you ready to go tonight?
Are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go tonight.
You have a mischievous look in your eye, and when you have a mischievous look in your eye, let me tell you, folks, you never know what's going to come out of this guy's mouth, and it's going to be funny. That much I can promise you.
That much is true.
I might have a little lageria tonight. Yeah. A little verbal D.
Oh, man. Anyways, tonight's guest, we're going to be joined at 7:40 tonight by Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record out of New Jersey. He's the beat writer for the New York Rangers, so we're pleased to welcome Andrew Gross to the program. If you're just joining us for the first time, you can follow us along at on Ustream at www.ustream.tv/IllegalCurve. That's the area where you can watch the live video of us in the room, live chat. So, you know, if you want to talk to some other fans of hockey, that's a good spot to do it. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, and you can follow us on Facebook, IllegalCurve.com. Phone number, get in touch with us if you have anything you want to talk about hockey-wise. 780-KICK, 780-5425. Gentlemen, let's get started tonight with what happened between Nicholas Chalmerson and Jason Pominville earlier this week.
I thought for a second you were going to say, gentlemen, start your engines, but...
No. Yeah, that's a little too NASCAR for me.
Yeah, wow, that was a bad hit. I mean, you know what? I was going to bring this up, and that hit actually made Pardon the Interruption.
Yes, I saw it today.
Only the bad stuff makes Pardon the Interruption.
Only the bad stuff, and this is one of those things it's going to happen every year. There will always be hits like this, no matter how you penalize it or whatever. There's going to be hits like this. But what I wanted to say was on PTI, Kornheiser brought something up. Tony Kornheiser of ESPN brought something up that we've talked about. I mean, way before the show ever started, and you know, we were young. We used to talk about this, and he suggested that players who are suspended should basically wait out for the duration of the injured player's injury. In this case, I tend to agree with that because if Pominville ends up... I wouldn't be surprised if Pominville misses quite a bit of action because of this hit.
Issues I have with that. In theory, it works because in theory, you know, you're trying to penalize a guy for as long as he's put somebody out. But I'm going to have a couple of issues. First of all, if you have a really good player like Sidney Crosby hitting Colton Orr, for example, which is rare, but if it did happen and Colton Orr were to get injured, well, then if the Leafs and Penguins were to, say, play in the playoffs or play again the next night, Colton Orr would most likely
still be out of the game,
an injury, and so would Crosby. That's the first thing. Second thing would be that, you know, you're basically penalizing the guy for how injured the other player got, no matter the intent, right?
Right.
So if a guy intends to absolutely ram a guy through the boards, and somehow the guy's just tough and plays the next day, well, then there's no injury. There's no injury, and there's no recourse. This is the biggest thing with this hit. I've said it for a while that the NHLPA needs to do this with itself, you know, within itself.
We talked about this all of last year.
But at this point, it's past that, because I don't trust the NHLPA, under fair or not, to do anything like that. Maybe they will eventually, but not right now. This is certainly a new leadership within the NHLPA.
Because they know the players don't want it.
Well, that might be that might be it.
They don't want to.
But some players do. Like Ryan Miller spoke out, and Drew's going to have his quote in a second. My biggest issue is this, guys. Colin Campbell has, for years now, not come down hard enough on hits like this. Mm-hmm. And not only has he not come down hard enough on hits like this, there's been absolutely, positively, no consistency from Colin Campbell with respect to concussions, hits to the head, blindside hits. One is 2 games, one's 4, one's none. Booth, you know, Mike Richards was it zero games last year on David Booth, I believe?
Yeah.
And how many was Cook on Savard? He's still not playing, although he came back for a brief period of time. Then you have the Chalmers in it. I'm not saying all are the same, but all are of a similar vein.
They're shots all to the head.
Shots to the head, blindside hits. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you talked about policing this all summer, and all you do is come down and you give a guy a 2-game suspension.
Richie, I just want to I want to say just two things really quickly about this. I feel that, you know, I agree with you. I feel that Campbell hasn't been consistent, and not only has he not been consistent, I feel that he hasn't increased the amount of games that players are suspended.
Well, you see,
exactly.
To prevent
absolutely.
This stuff. And another thing is,
that's my issue.
I thought this Jarmelson hit was more of a hit from behind than a shot to the head.
Also, I could also go with you on that.
I think.
Jarmelson is very much, you know, he played a similar game to Cronwall in Detroit. They play
on
the edge.
That's Nicholas Cronwall.
They're physical. They'll run you from their blue line to the other blue line. They play a physical game, and that's what makes them good. But sometimes when you play on the edge, you cross the line. And he crossed the line, and he hasn't had to pay for it at all. Two games? Are
well,
you kidding me? Two games?
You see, and I take issue with both of you saying that Colin Campbell has been inconsistent with his penalties. I think he has been consistent. The problem is he's been consistently lenient. The fact that Chalmerson got two games, and James Wisniewski got two games as well, and we'll talk about the Wisniewski-Avery thing.
I was ranting to you about that.
The Wisniewski-Avery thing later on in the show, because, I mean, I think that made everybody in this room laugh more than anything. So, I mean,
yeah.
The NHL has to suspend him, but it's not a serious real issue. But the fact that Chalmerson got two games for that hit, to me, is completely, it's just illogical.
All summer, all the league talked about was hits to the head and blindside hits. The first one comes, two games.
I mean, and it wasn't, there was no, you know, the puck wasn't in his feet. He just hit him early.
But
he hit him in the head.
He didn't even touch the puck.
Didn't touch the puck.
I go back to the NHLPA, and let's lead into the Ryan Miller comment, because I think guys like him are going to have to lead through the PA, through the leadership of the PA, and lead the, and ask leadership or go to leadership and say, you know what? It's enough. Start policing. We don't care if guys lose money via suspension. Start policing it and tell the NHL that you want a minimum of 5 games for every hit to the head.
Yeah.
Now, this is the thing, guys. Do they weigh safety over money? Or is it not the NHLPA's issue and it's incumbent upon Colin Campbell and Gary Bettman to impose the sanctions?
Doesn't this just seem like a no-brainer 5 or 6 game suspension?
To me...
Doesn't it seem like it should be simple?
The minimum level has got to be 5 games here.
It's the first big hit of the year. It's the first shot to the head of the year.
It's all over ESPN, it's all over TSN, it's all over sports.
You make it 5 or 6 games, the players say, whoa, they're not fooling around this year. It's an easy thing to decide. And he almost seems like he's overmatched for the job, Colin Campbell.
It almost seems like he's overmatched. But I think he is. I think in that situation he is. Colin Campbell's an old-school guy. You know, remember, he coached the assistant coach in the Rangers in 94, coached the Rangers after, did a pretty good job. But, you know, let's go back to that. You know, as a coach, guys, he was known as a veterans coach, an old-school kind of guy. You know, he rode the Gretzky's and Messier's and those guys as hard as you could, and Esatikinen's and guys like that in that run in 97. He kind of polices the game like that, too, old school. We're in 2010, guys.
It doesn't work.
It's not 1980 when Colin played.
Yeah, it just doesn't work
it's
anymore.
It's not old school. Yeah, this is exactly, the league is different.
The players
Everything's on tape. Yeah. Players have better equipment. Players have better training. The game is faster.
Let's go to Ryan Miller's quote quickly here. Ryan Miller said about this, you can't have a hit like that. It's dangerous. Ryan Miller is the all-star goaltender for the Buffalo Sabres.
Yep.
I'm glad he admitted he didn't mean to do it, but you've got to change the culture sometime, and I hope the league wakes up and sets a precedent for the year. Now, obviously, he made those comments upon when the hit happened or in the dressing room after the game. He's got to be sitting here throwing his hands up in the air saying, what is it going to take for a guy to get suspended?
I did hear him after that, and he basically said, in so many words, it's a start, it's better than nothing. But he didn't come out and say, it's not enough. But that's basically how he seemed to have felt. And I would agree with him. Again, guys, the safety is an issue here. Palmenville. And by the way, guys, back to Edgy's point about they should be out as long as the player who injures. 2 games is what Chalmerson got. I know that, but Palmenville is not going to be out just for 2 games, guys.
No, Palmenville's at least that was for a bit.
Tavares
and
Ben both aren't going to play at least till Monday coming up. They're going to miss at least 3 or 4 games respectively. Jamie Benn, Tavares, John Tavares both had concussions since the season started. Now, you're going to suddenly go to Palmenville, whose hit was, to me, far worse than the hits that those two guys got. And he's going to come back within 2 games? No. And so he's going to be, if you even say the minimum threshold for these hits is 5 games, well, you know what? Drew, it doesn't have to be because concussions keep you out for a minimum 5 games these days.
At this point in time,
regardless of even what happens, there's
a
minimum
threat.
Tests, light tests.
You never know when a guy's going to come. I mean, look, here's the list of players in the NHL currently out with concussion problems. You have Jamie Benn of the Dallas Stars.
Heck of an underrated center.
Yes.
Love his game.
John Tavares of the New York Islanders. Oh. Only one of the best young players in the league.
Right. In a market that needs him.
In a market that is desperate for anything. Mm-hmm. Rene Bork, a guy that the Flames are relying on up front.
He has tons of speed. He's their second best forward.
Yeah, tons of speed. Yeah. Ian LaPerriere, his career is now over. Yeah. I mean, he's going to sit out this year. I mean, his concussion happened by taking a shot to the face.
Different.
You know, Cam Jansen.
That wasn't a fight.
Well, I mean, you know, Mark Savard. I mean, again.
We have to qualify the fight and the LaPerriere one. But,
obviously. It's important to talk about. Let's talk about concussions sort of on a whole. Are there more concussions now than ever before? Or is it
more
just the fact that just more diagnosed concussions?
I would lean towards the latter, Drew. I really would. But at the same time, maybe not only because of the equipment, and you know, I have a big problem with the equipment these days. You know, it's so light, it's too hard, guys. We talked about this on the show, but last year, you know, look at Chris Chelios' shoulder pads or Wayne Gretzky. You couldn't line up a guy from the other blue line and hit him because it would hurt your shoulder. Not anymore. And the NHL doesn't clamp down on that either. Maybe because of the marketing money, I'm not sure. There's issues there. There's a lot of issues that cause concussions. Mm-hmm. You know, policing is one of them. Yeah. Equipment's another. The lack of respect the players have for each other is another one. There's many reasons, but we're not seeing any progress. You know, it's what we're seeing right now is all talk, no action from all parties involved.
It frankly astounds me that this could have been Colin Campbell's decision in terms of a suspension.
You said it though. I mean, he's inconsistent. I said within his rulings. You know, one's two, one's four, one's three. But Colin Campbell, if left just in his hands, and you know, why wasn't there something from Gary Bettman saying, hey? Minimum. But left in Colin Campbell's hands, two games is what you gotta expect.
But it doesn't make any sense. Why doesn't somebody whisper in his ear? Denise, do we have a caller?
Yeah, Owen Catelli wants to ask you a question.
All right, okay. Let's put him on.
Owen, welcome back to the program.
Hi, great show. I'm really enjoying it.
Thanks, Owen. What's up?
Is this live?
Yeah.
I just have a question for Rich. If he doesn't think that, or I want to know what he thinks about Tronoville in his situation. I saw him skating backwards outside of his zone, mm-hmm. receiving the pass.
I think he was inside his zone, wasn't he? I thought he was just
at
the top of the circle.
Are you talking about the position of Pominville on that hit?
Yes. Yeah, I believe he was in a vulnerable position.
He was. I mean, he was somewhat. Oh, and I think that this is the thing.
Yeah,
if he had his back right completely to the play, I would have a bigger issue with it because, you know, some of these guys turn their back and get hit into the boards from behind. In this situation, you know, it was a breakout pass kind of along the boards, and he went to it, took a little bit longer than he thought, and he kind of leaned into it to receive it. Now, maybe he should have braced himself a little bit for the hit, but at the same time, you shouldn't be hitting a guy from behind, and even from the side, it was an iffy hit. And I think the biggest thing is that maybe Pominville would have braced himself, but he hadn't touched the puck yet, so we don't know what he would have done, right?
I see. That's a good point. But it just reminds me of situations like Booth, who I'm sure you guys all remember as a hit that he took, and he was out with concussed, like you've been talking about, for a long time. But if you look at that, at what happened before that, he's admiring his pass when he gets hit. He comes back, plays his first game, and then out again admiring his passes. I'm not saying Cromwell is this kind of player, but I think there's also players out there who deserve to get hit for the way they play sometimes.
And it's a good point in that it's a fine line between, you know, policing the game and letting the game police itself, right? Admiring your passes. Now, on the Booth play, in my opinion, he admired the pass, but also Richards kind of reached out. I thought it was both ways, but he did admire his pass. And Savard and Cook, same thing. He admires the pass a bit, but
Pominville wasn't touching the puck.
This situation is a little bit different, but yeah, you know, in terms of admiring the passes, there is a short, you know, half a second or second where you're going to get hammered and people aren't going to really feel bad for you. But in this situation where it's a blind play and you don't even have the puck, then I think the NHL's got to police that.
That's just it. I mean, I think that's the difference between this hit and a lot of the other ones. Owen, we're going to have to let you go, but
great
I think
call.
This is great call. I think this is the big difference between that hit or you know, hits where you admire the pass.
And this guy,
Pominville did not touch the puck.
What he's saying is, you know, it's incumbent upon the player to also protect himself, and I totally agree with that. I mean, if anybody played hockey, and all of us in this room have played hockey, you know, protecting yourself is one of the lessons you learn as a young
you
hockey
don't
player.
Stand a foot away from the boards with facing the glass.
I thought Pominville was okay here, and I thought that the hit was a preemptive act prior to getting
He had his foot sort of up against the boards. He was sort of sideways to the boards. You know, that's how you receive a breakout pass oftentimes when it's running around the boards like
that. Different also because Pominville is playing the right side and, breaking the puck out on as a right-handed shot, guys, right? So he's got to pick the puck off the boards on his backhand.
Yeah.
If it's slow and move it up to his forehand, whereas if he was playing the other side, he'd scoop it up, make the pass right out of the zone.
That's right. So it would be a one-touch pass.
There's certain
factors
that play into this, but overall, remember Chalmerson also is a defenseman, so had time. Watch, boom. You know,
and he hit him early. You just can't hit him.
I like the way Chalmerson plays, guys. This is a dirty hit, though.
Yeah, it is.
And Drew, there's a few things quickly that I think are being a little bit missed here. I think that hits like this in a game happen all the time. Where the player doesn't have his back turned to the guy, and that's a problem. In terms of suspensions go, because that hit is such a routine hit where the forward has his back to the boards and a defenseman comes in to nail him, except that his back isn't turned to him. And another thing here, and I think it's just simple. And this is going back to what we were saying earlier. Until you start making these suspensions higher, Rich.
Yeah,
this is going to happen, and I don't think
that takes away the two most important things these guys have: is he playing and money.
Yeah,
and that's what really matters. If you hit him in the pocketbook and you prevent them from being on the ice, it really will make a difference. Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to talk about the debacle that has been the start of the New Jersey Devils season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 Kick FM. It's 7:24 tonight. We're back on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. I'm Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and then the operator of the R-Desk, Michael Remus, who is quite in favor of the Matthew Good that Denise came back from the commercial.
I'm not. I'm not a big Matthew Good fan.
That's a good song. I'm not a big Matthew Good fan, but a good song right there.
Okay. You know, I'm like, Denise, you let me down.
Anyways, we'll deal with the music selections later on in the show. Welcome back. For the first segment, we were talking about
Denise Nicholas. Picks way better songs than Drew.
Hey, I had the party.
I disagree.
It's like night and day. Drew
was it Lady Gaga week or something? No. Was it?
Say that again?
Was it Lady Gaga week or something in 2 weeks in a row?
No. But Drew's been playing
when you're Ezzy, every week's Lady Gaga week.
No, but, Drew was playing Jersey Shore and some other.
You did play a little Jersey Shore, Drew.
I did it to mock some of the people that we went on the Illegal Curve road trip with. Yeah. That's all I was doing it for. There was a motive behind my Jersey Shore motivation.
Who, the person you were mocking actually heard the show and was a bit offended.
I'm not surprised. I'm not the least bit surprised about that development. Anyways, let's move on to New Jersey. As I said on earlier when I was on the Great Canadian Talk Show previewing tonight's show, the Devils were the team that got us through the bulk of the offseason with their Ilya Kovalchuk doings and their alleged malfeasance around the NHL salary cap, so they might as well continue making headlines. Ezzy, you're the Devils fan. I'm going to start with you on this one. What are your thoughts about the Devils dressing 15 guys for the game a couple of nights ago?
I don't think it's a very good idea if you're trying to win a game, but they
so isn't that the point of every game?
Well, yeah, but I mean, when you only have 15 skaters, that means that you only have three forward lines.
Oh, I understand.
And unfortunately,
it's crazy.
Unfortunately, New Jersey most teams need four forward lines, but it's unfortunate. I mean, the only good news out of this is that Lamoriello has been fortunate enough to keep his entire team. He's obviously been trying to move someone. And he was trying to move someone before the season started to get under the salary cap. The only good news is that he's been able to keep all these guys, even though I'm sure he'd still like to get rid of one of Rolston or Zubris.
He got lucky today.
Well, he got very lucky today.
But, I mean, they were forced in the situation. Nobody was taking the bait, and they had Rolston and Volchenkov both suffered injuries, and Letourneau LeBlanc, who was, subsequently been waived, he was suspended. So they had no other options. Mayer wasn't under contract. Now he is.
You make
under
it
contract.
Sound as though somebody forced them into that situation.
Why clarify about the issue right
no,
now?
No. Anyway, Lamoriello forced himself into the situation.
Yeah, the Devils had, I mean, the Devils had a full NHL roster, but they were right up against the salary cap with minimal, if any, wiggle room, about $100,000 worth of wiggle
and you
room.
You cannot play a game over the salary cap.
That's right. And in the first game of the season, Anton Volchenkov tried to eat a puck, I believe. I think he got hit. That's what happened. He got hit in the face with a puck. Rolston suffered an injury, and and we'll get to Rolston again in a second. And then Pierre-Luc Letourneau LeBlanc got into a
lost his mind.
Got into a fight,
a non-existent fight.
Well, he took a game misconduct in the last 5 minutes of game, which is an automatic one-game suspension. And after the fact, the Devils decided to waive him, but whatever. So they're down three forwards, and they don't have any room, salary cap room, to call up replacements. So here you go. You now have to play your next game with, you know, three forward lines and six defensemen.
Which Daryl Sutter had to do with Calgary, not last year, but the year prior.
That's
and
right,
he got raked over to the Coles.
In Calgary over.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely. And that was, but that was a little bit different, I think, because that was at the end of the year.
Sure.
I mean, I think that they, I mean, at the end of the year, they had, I mean, they had a ton of injuries. And, you know, they when they played that, they had eight injuries or something like that. Not three injuries.
Actually, eight injuries right now. But
three
yeah.
injuries are something that happened. The NHL rule book does allow for it, but this is what the collective bargaining agreement says. Article 16.4 of the collective bargaining agreement, except in case of emergency, there shall be no reduction of the required minimum playing rosters of the clubs below 18 skaters and two goaltenders. So
now,
the minimum is 18 skaters.
Looking at the language there, you'll see that in case... Except in the case of emergency, that is very broad.
Yes. Now the
and
question
very open
is,
to interpretation.
Now, I mean, it seems like nobody really wants to make more of a stink about this than you know has already been made, and the stink has been minimal. A, do you think that the Devils are yet again in violation of the CBA? And B, you know, what is Lou Lamoriello thinking?
What's he thinking? That's a great question, and I wonder that because this is you know your job, your primary job as a general manager is to accumulate talent. I understand that. But the second most important job in this day and age is to manage the cap, and he has done a poor job of that. And you know what? He has nobody to blame but himself because of numerous things, such as the Brian Rolston contract or the Danis Zubras contract, you know, even the Bryce Salvador contract, putting up the Kovalchuk contract, acquiring Jason Arnott. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. He's paying all these older players a lot of money. There's a lot of reasons why Lou Lamoriello should be accountable for this. Not only that, the Kovalchuk contract goes through, and then he doesn't account for that contract being an issue of putting him over the cap. You maybe if nobody wants to dance with you in a trade because for whatever reason they're not into your players, okay?
Because you've overpaid them.
And send somebody to the minors.
You see it in New York with Wade Redden. You see it in Edmonton with Sheldon Suri.
See
it with Jeff Finger in Toronto. You know you might not be happy about having to send a veteran making $5 million to the minors, but you're the one who's put yourself in that position.
That's right.
Maybe don't trade for Anton Volchenkov or don't sign Anton Volchenkov. You know whatever you have to do. You know, you've made your bed, and now you know. Unfortunately, your players are stuck playing a game with 15 skaters.
Right, Drew, and it looks like they're not the NHL or the NHLPA, even though they're investigating this,
and they're
you know, nothing's going to happen here. I think what the thinking is that they're in a tight spot. Everyone knows that New Jersey is right up against the cap because all the owners and the NHL knows all of this stuff. It's not a big surprise here. So, I mean, the thinking is that a week from now. This entire mess will be figured out. We'll call up a couple guys from the AHL.
Well, they got a big relief today.
We'll talk about that in a second. The issue, though, is the PA. Because the guys who are injured are getting paid. It's the guys who they could call up from the AHL, could get an NHL salary for that game, are not getting it because of Lou Lamoriello's cap mismanagement. That, to me, is a issue the PA should be pushing. Because that's your players not getting as much money as they should.
And it wouldn't be surprising if other teams that are in a similar situation as the Devils... Yeah. Employ the same thing. Maybe not to the degree where they're only dressing 15
generally,
players, but
they only have 15
Ezzie, good
guys.
Point.
They only
generally,
have 15
the
guys
part,
dressed tonight.
Do they? Generally, for the most part, they weren't sure about that. Yeah. So generally, for the most part, because managers keep some cap space throughout the year as a little bit of flexibility, and then they can max it out later on if they want to. You generally don't get that close. Now, the blessing in disguise that we're referring to is that Brian Rolston is out 4 to 6 weeks with an injury, and of course the cap
sports hernia,
and the cap gets decided on calculated on a daily basis. Now Brian Rolston, I believe, makes $5 million this year,
something
four and a half,
somewhere around there.
The cap hit. He will be off the books, quote unquote.
They've put him on long term injury.
LTIR,
So his cap hit will not be applicable for the next 4 to 6 weeks, which is a huge relief and means that you know they can call up. You know, there's three guys from the minors who are making, you know, $500,000 or whatever it is. So they'll be able to get back to playing with 18 guys. But you know, what happens if they suffer day to day injuries that happen? How long is he going to keep this charade up for?
I mean, I know the rumors they want to trade Salvador. I mean, I guess there's no real guys who want to get white. By the way, Rolston's salary cap hit this year is $5 million. So, you know.
He's not worth $5 million.
You wonder why you're in a cap problem. We've went over this roster ad nauseum here, but there's too many guys who are getting paid too much money. And you know, and then you go out and you sign Johan Hedberg for $1 million again in the offseason. I mean,
Richie, I really don't think it's a coincidence that the Devils lost that game
cap hit
with 15 players. There's no way that you can possibly say that doesn't affect the game.
They weren't trying to win that game. They're trying to survive that
game.
And
the truth is, you know, your first line is the Kovalchuk. We're going to talk about that line later, but the Kovalchuk, Zajac, Parise. Second line is Arnett, Elias, Langenbrunner.
Yep.
And then your third line with Rolston in there is with him and Zubris and Clarkson on the right. You know, Rolston gets injured, so your Zubris and Clarkson, are they checking who's penalty killing? Who's getting a break when there's penalty killing in power play?
27 minutes.
You can't
play
a game with three lines.
Kovalchuk, 27 minutes is what he played in that first
and
game.
And you ask Vinny LeCavalier, Marty St. Louis, and Brad Richards and those guys, how they fared over the course of the season playing for John Tortorella, logging 24, 25 plus minutes a game. It's you will be drained when it matters most.
Absolutely.
Similar to the whole Brodeur thing every year.
It's you do that for more than one game, it's going to certainly have a long term effect on your entire season.
Yeah, there's a genius to Lou Lamoriello, and that should get credit for all those cups. All those cups, Drew.
Game has passed them.
I'm not necessarily saying that, but it's been since the lockout, this team has been successful in the regular season. They haven't made it past the first round, and now they're into this cap management, and they seem to lack direction with so many older players.
Yep.
And it's certainly not the end of the road for him. He's still one of the top GMs in the league, but this is not one of his finer moments.
I don't think he is. I think the game has passed him by.
I think the last 5 years have been difficult. I mean, he dealt with those Malakov-McGillney contracts right off the bat, and it really hasn't improved.
Sure.
He has a soft spot for signing former Devils and giving them too much money.
Yep.
And he also, even though he's an extremely intelligent man, he sometimes takes too many risks. The Devils...
Old guys.
No, but I mean, with not just player signings, but the way he kind of conducts, the way he moves players within his own system.
Yep.
And I mean,
the farm system is the
guys. Like, if you give him credit too for the fact that he's got Zajac at a $3.8 million cap this year, Parise at 3.1, and Brodeur 5.2. I mean, there are moments that he shines.
Yep.
He seems to have a big problem with the free agent market.
Yeah,
you know, similar counterpart there in New York, Glenn Sather, seems to have an issue with writing blank checks.
Well, let's move away from Lou Lamoriello for a second. Let's talk about the on-ice performance of the Devils. John McClain, head coach of the Devils, actually canceled practice early today.
Kicked them off
the ice. The team started with a lackluster practice. He got the team together, apparently unleashed some curse words at him and was screaming at the top of his lungs, according to the reports of the reporters who were at the practice. And then when the practice and the quality of practice didn't increase or didn't improve, he threw the team off the ice.
And they're playing right now.
They're tied with Buffalo 0-0 right now.
At the end of two.
Yeah. But, I mean... This Devils team just seems like there's a bit of a cloud hanging over it. If you're getting thrown off the ice you're not even through 1 week of the NHL season and your coach is that furious at your practice,
I caught a bit of the Devils games and Ezzy, I tried to watch as much hockey obviously as possible. Ezzy has caught more of them than I have, so he's going to be able to speak to this more so.
I haven't caught a Devils game this year.
Your dad, the biggest Devils fan, is jumping off the bandwagon.
I've watched quite a bit of hockey, but no, I haven't actually caught a Devils game.
This is a team, Ezzy, that I think a bit right now and there actually seems to me a little bit of a lack of speed on the non-first lines. And I think there's also a little bit of a lack of identity. John McClain, remember, guys, is a counterpart and played with a bunch of these guys before.
Yes.
Or they tell in the beginning of their careers, the Jason Arnest guys like that, I think he played with.
And
regardless, he's a guy who's not that coach, necessarily a coach. He's a player-turned-coach. And I think what I've noticed is that there might be a bit of an adjustment period that we should have accounted for, for people to start respecting John McClain and see the real deal. Now, remember also this. Not only John McClain as a rookie head coach. John McClain's rookie head coach as Lou Lamoriello is the GM. Basically, the fact is that all these players who have basically all grew up with the Devils or played with the Devils and re-signed there know Lamoriello. If he doesn't like a coach after a while, see ya. So what's the line here? I mean, is McClain going to get their trust? Or is the whole season going to be played, and then he'll be tossed? That is always a possibility in New Jersey. So you have to understand that players must be thinking about that, too. And it's a veteran team, guys. A veteran team with a rookie coach. Difficult.
Yeah. And this is a rookie coach who, Lou Lamoriello has been grooming him since he retired to eventually take over this team.
He was hesitant to hire him, but then he finally did.
It seems like this is just a bad start to a season in New Jersey. And if this is...
they'll get it on track.
I don't doubt that they will
get on track. But
I mean, you know, you got
to
get it.
And to be honest, the team like the Devils wants scores to be 0-0 like they are in Buffalo, and granted, so does Buffalo. But because that game playing many years seems to always be 0-0. But that's better for the team.
It'll be
as much as they have a lot of offense, they always want to play a defensive system.
It'll be interesting though to see the minutes that the guys are playing again. You know, it'll be interesting. You know, is Kovalchuk going to have to play another 27
minutes? Well,
yeah,
they're playing on a short roster today, so you could be right about that.
Yeah, I mean, how many? You know, how long, I know it's early in the year, and you're not playing as many games as you are in the heart of the season. But how many of these games can you play?
I'll tell you this: a game on October 13th counts the same as a game in the middle of January, February.
And it seems like Lamoriello's forgotten that. If you know that you're putting, Rolston on LTI today, why don't you have three guys up from Albany?
Well, I don't know what the actual policy is in terms of putting him on LTI. Like when it has to happen, when it goes into effect, it might go into effect tomorrow morning.
Okay, that's fair. But I mean, you get those guys up there, get them with the team, get this team, get their heads into the season. This isn't the exhibition
season anymore.
It's
terrible that it comes to a point where you give Rolston a contract, you know, overvalued, but you give Rolston a contract, and then all the fans are hoping for him to get injured because of the cap issues,
or at the very least, he's moved.
Send somebody down.
I typed in Brian Rolston's name on Twitter today, and all it was Devils fans hoping for his injury.
Because they knew it was a possibility it could be a long-term injury.
Because of the cap.
Because of the cap relief. I mean, that's, you know, Lou Lamoriello has not done a good job with this roster right now, salary cap-wise. It'll be interesting to see how it resolves itself throughout the rest of the season. Let's leave it there. When we come back from the Bergen Record in, as it happens, New Jersey, Andrew Gross, the beat writer for the New York Rangers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 Kick FM.
Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise.
7:41 in the evening. We're back on the Illegal Curve Radio Show here at the 92.9 Kick FM studios in downtown Winnipeg. My name is Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, and we're pleased to be joined on the line now by Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record. Andrew, welcome to the Illegal Curve Radio Show.
Thanks for having me, guys. How are you guys doing tonight?
Very well, Andrew. Thanks. Andrew, can you update our listeners on Chris Drury's status, and then I'll have a follow-up question after that.
Yeah, Chris Drury will make his season's debut Friday in the Rangers' home opener against the Maple Leafs. They activated him off injured reserve. Talked to him today. He was skating. He was skating with Marian Gaborik and Alex Frolov on the top line. Although, you know, there's a bit of skepticism as to whether that's going to be the case come Friday. But with Erik Christensen apparently out with a little bit of a groin hip flexor thing, they just did a one-for-one substitution. And to create a roster spot for Drury, they sent the ex-Buffalo Sabre, Tim Kennedy, down to the AHL today.
Sticking with Drury, what's his role on the team going to be this year? You know, what are the Rangers hoping he's going to accomplish both on the ice and then in the dressing room?
Well, he's a quiet guy publicly to the media. You know, he's friendly, but he never really, you know, he says much that's quote-worthy. However, his teammates really swear by him as an on-ice leader and as an in-the-room leader. So, obviously, that's going to be a look to continue this year. It's funny you ask about an on-ice role because I don't think Drury quite is sure what Tortorella wants from him this year. You know, John said that he's going to try and get Chris back into more of an offensive role. I don't know whether or not Chris, you know, at age 34 is ever going to be a highly productive offensive player anymore. He's certainly a great defensive player, you know, probably one of the league's best shot blockers. I suspect when they get their lines sorted out, that's the role he'll be. He'll be one of their top penalty killers and a guy they use when they feel like they have to shut down someone else's top line.
What was the Rangers locker room reaction to the James Wisniewski, Sean Avery gesture incident? Gesture gate, if you want to call it that.
Sean Avery's reaction after the game was pretty classic. He pretty much said, you know, he was really surprised that Wisniewski only got a on-ice warning, that he wasn't penalized for that. Although, you know, it happened quickly. And, you know, if the TV cameras don't catch that, I don't, you know, Gary Bettman was in the arena, and I spoke to him during the game, and he said he didn't see it. So, I mean, Avery's reaction was basically, you know, imagine if I had done something, you know, heck, the last time I did something like that, they sent me to rehab, you know. So he had a great reaction. He was also very skeptical as to whether the league would do anything. I think he definitely feels like, to some extent, the league is kind of out to get him. He basically said that, you know, he goes, he doesn't expect anything to happen because nothing ever happens. Today, you know, Tortorella declined to comment on it, saying basically it was a league matter and over with. And Avery kind of walked right past the camera crew looking for a reaction from him. And to be honest with you, that's the wise move for Sean. He doesn't get any benefit by commenting today. As for the rest of the room, it didn't really register to anyone else. It was pretty much a Sean Avery matter.
In terms of Avery, Andrew, has he changed at all? It generally seems unlikely that he changed. Or has the team, you know, mainly Tortorella, changed their attitude towards him?
I'd like to say yes. I still get the feeling that John doesn't really quite know what to do with Sean.
Yeah.
Sean was kind of like, you know, given to him, but he's not the player that he would have necessarily chosen. When Sean is playing effectively, he's a very effective player for the team and for the Rangers, and the Rangers typically do better when Sean is, you know, allowed to play the way he wants to play and the way he knows, you know, that's his game. Last year, it just didn't come naturally for him. There were times he would get going, and then times it kind of felt like mm-hmm. he was really unsure what his role would be. He said during training camp that he just had to come with a different mindset. And I think, although he didn't elaborate once he said that, I think he's just putting his head down and going, look, the only thing I can do is be me. And this is who I am, and this is how I'm going to play. And, you know, if Torts likes it, he likes it. If he doesn't like it, there's nothing I can do about it because I can't be the person I'm not.
That's a good, very good point. Moving to a rookie who's made a lot of headlines, obviously. You know, we're going to talk about Derek Stepan. Not many people outside of New York know about him aside from the hat trick in Buffalo. But can you tell people about, you know, where he came from and what right now, what he's providing the Rangers right now?
Sure. I mean, he has a very good resume. He comes from out of the University of Wisconsin. The Rangers were very hot, you know, to get him signed out of college. He was also captain for Team USA during the World Juniors. You know, obviously, I believe they won the gold there with him, I'm getting my memory correct.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he definitely has a very good pedigree. And, you know, he's a 20-year-old kid. He's never going to be, you know, I don't think he's going to be a 35, 40 goal scorer in this league. I think, you know, he'll probably settle between the 20 and 30 goals. He's just a very mature, poised kid. You kind of got to be around him to understand that he may be 20 in age, but you add 10 years in terms of just the way he handles things. He's very calm. He seems to get it right off the bat, which is pretty amazing. Tortorella the other day, and not necessarily talking about their play, but in their demeanor, John Tortorella compared Stepan to a very young Brad Richards, wow, who we had in Tampa Bay, just saying the two guys came into the room, they understood the dressing room hierarchy, they got it immediately, what it means to be a pro hockey player. And, you know, Derek has fun. He's a very good guy to talk to. His teammates really, really like him already. But I'll tell you what, before that Islander game on Monday, it was kind of the first time I had walked past him on a game day. I didn't see him before the Buffalo game. And he was so focused. I mean, he didn't want to say hi to you or anything. He just wanted to go do his stretching and get out on the ice. So he's a very intense player, but I keep coming back to it. He's really poised. I mean, we're already projecting him to be a captain of this team, wow, probably like 4 or 5 years down the road.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve radio show, and we're joined by Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record. Andrew, talking about behind the bench in New York, John Tortorella, he's, you know, seems like he's got a style that he's taken with him from Tampa Bay right to New York, and he doesn't seem to want to deviate very often. Is that the sort of the same reaction you're sort of expecting from him this year, that, you know, this is the way I coach this and this is the way it's going to be?
Yeah, to be fair, he did sort of change his style last year, sort of out of necessity. I mean, his motto is safe as death, and he wants the defenseman to push up, and he wants him to join the attack. And last year, about two months or so into the season, he just completely pulled back on it because he realized his defensemen weren't ready for it. So he did adapt somewhat. This year, it's right back to getting the defenseman up the ice. So, yeah, I mean, this is who John is. You know, if nothing else, he's very confident in his convictions. And he knows with 100% certainty in his mind his way does work. And he's not going to change what he does. So, this year the defensemen are getting right back into the attack. Mark Stahl, their number one defenseman, certainly showed towards the end of last year some signs of getting it. And that has to carry over to this season for the Rangers to be successful.
Andrew, I want to ask you about Michael Delzotto, a player I've really grown to like watching him play. And I mean, watched a fair amount of Ranger games over the years. He reminds me a bit, and I don't want to overstate it because I think we don't compare players to the same Ranger greats, but he reminds me a bit in terms of the way he takes the puck up the ice and through the neutral zone of Brian Leetch. Can you speak to a bit about Delzotto's offensive ability and how he's matured over the past year or so?
Yeah, I mean, the comparison has been made to Brian Leetch a little bit up here, too. I don't think Delzotto, I don't think he's an all-time great like Leetch is, but then again, he's just 20 and he's learning how to play, so maybe that's an unfair thing to say. But, he came up here and he was handed quite a bit of responsibility just kind of out of necessity. He's the guy that's running the power play. You know, he's quarterback, and that's continuing this season. It's tough to – he had a pretty rough game defensively Monday against the Islanders. One giveaway led directly to Blake Cuomo's first goal, and there were, by my count, at least three or four other bad turnovers. And that's the part of the game where when he struggles, that's where he's struggling. It's defensively. I think the big deal for him this year is he's been through the league once. He did not necessarily wear down. He had some injuries. He had a really nasty gash across his chest and rib cage last year. But by the Olympic break last year, you know, as a 19-year-old, he was sort of gassed. He was really, it was a long season for him. And I think mentally this year, he can pace himself a little bit better because he's been through it and he knows exactly how long the season is. So I look for a lot of improvement there and just, you know, in terms of stamina towards the end of the season.
Considering that the Rangers went out and got Marty Baron in the offseason, are you thinking that he's going to get more starts earlier on in the season, or do you see Lundqvist getting the same amount of starts as last year?
No, he had a career-high 73 last year, and, you know, Tortorella came in last year. It's almost like you could compare last year's quotes with this year's, and it's the same thing. He wants to reduce Lundqvist's games by maybe about 10. I mean, you figure Hank will play in the 62 to 65 range if things go well for the Rangers this year.
Okay.
Marty and Tortorella has been very clear that he doesn't just want to spot start Marty here, there. You know, if Marty is playing well, Marty is going to get, you know, back-to-back games here at times. You know, if he's winning, certainly John won't be afraid to throw him back out. And whereas last year, with the backup, you know, Steve Valiquette just, you know, lost the faith of the coaching staff, wound up going, being sent down to Hartford. And then it was a rotating, you know, two rookies, Chad Johnson and Matt Zobin. And then they brought in Alex Auld, who I think got into two games because at that point it was such a desperate playoff push that John had to keep throwing a Hank out there every day. So, I mean, John certainly doesn't want to go through that again this year.
Moving upstairs, and Glenn Sather's being, you know, the butt of all jokes, you know, north of the border. He's the butt of many jokes in reference to the Rangers. And I wanted to ask you, Andrew, I mean, there's a lot of things that you know, he does these days that are somewhat puzzling to me, whether it be the Derek Bugard, you know, contract or bringing in Todd White and things like that. But at the same time, I mean, he's accumulated a lot of young talent, especially in the back end and then even up front. And there's a lot more young talent than, say, the Rangers had basically from, you know, 95, 96 through the beginning of the, you know, the turn of the century there through 2002, 2003. So how is he viewed by the fans of New York? Is it just pure, this guy hasn't got it done and he's kind of wasting our money? Or is there some fans who you know, defend Sather's reign and saying, well, he's got a lot more young talent in the stable than we once did?
I would say Glenn at this point probably has, maybe if it's possible, more defenders in the media, in the local media, than he might amongst the fans who are, you know, this is 10 going on 11 years here in New York for Glenn.
Crazy.
And the fans have had it. I mean, you know, there's no two ways about it. I mean, they had it with him probably when he was coaching the team, you know, before the lockout. I agree with you. There's a lot of good talent, a lot of good young talent, particularly amongst defensemen in this organization. And I think the one thing Glenn does really well is he organizes a good staff, and then he trusts his staff very well. And the one guy I'd point out is Gordy Clark, who kind of runs the Rangers draft. You know, he does a very, very nice job spotting talent. But, yeah, you know, Glenn's in a tough spot, and he does make some moves that make you scratch your head.
Sure,
but on the other hand, you look back, that Scott Gomez trade he made last year could be that's one of the NHL's all-time great trades.
Yep.
If you look at what the Rangers got out of that deal. I mean, first of all, I mean, you come back with, you know, Marion Gaborik for that, and then, you know, you get Chris Higgins and Aleš Kotelik, and you sort of turn that into you know, you got a Brandon Proust out of it, and then you've got these two young defensemen who they got back from the Canadiens too, Ryan McDonough, who was Derek Stepan's teammate at Wisconsin, and Pavel Belenchenko, and both of them looked very strong in training camp this year, and you can just imagine, you know, if they wind up with Belenchenko and McDonough in the back end, you know, and Gaborik in the front end, you know, for dumping Scott Gomez on the Canadiens, I mean, that's an all-time winner there.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about the fans, what are their expectations for the Rangers this coming season? You know, what are the fan? What's sort of the buzz around the fans that, you know, okay, you know, first round playoff defeat, that's a success, that's a failure. You know, what do the fans think of this team?
You know, I would definitely say they're taking a kind of a wait and see. I mean, you know, the easy answer is the New York Ranger fan every year wants his team to win the Stanley Cup because, you know, first it was, oh, we haven't won since 1940. And if you think about it, people are getting antsy because 1994 is really fading into the background pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I suspect that most people are realistic about this team, and they expect a lot of what they've gotten, you know, pretty much since the lockout, which is a team that's competing for the playoffs, but they're not competing for one of the top spots in the conference. This is a team that probably the last 2-3 weeks of the season, maybe right down like last year to the final game, you're not going to know whether they're going to finish 6th, 7th, or 10th. You know, they're going to be right in that range, I would think.
Or lose a shootout to the eventual Stanley Cup runner-ups.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record, thanks very much for joining us tonight on the Illegal Curve Radio Show.
My pleasure, guys. Good talking to you.
Say hi to Tom for us.
Thanks, Andrew. Take care.
That was a reference to Tom Gulliddy, who we tried to get in on the show before. He also works for the Bergen Record.
I'm sure Andrew didn't get that.
Yeah, I'm not sure why you said that, but that's okay.
Well, because Tom, I've been in correspondence with Tom. He works at the same newspaper.
Oh, we know that.
There's nothing to get. I just said say hi to Tom. There isn't like a secret. This isn't like a cryptic message.
Hey, Drew.
Yeah.
It was your grandpa.
Oh.
And
okay.
He wanted you to talk more about the Moose.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we will. I am excited about the Moose this year. For Drew Zady, we will talk about the Moose later on in the show. Richie?
When will we talk about the Moose?
Anytime.
We already have the show planned.
We'll throw in a couple minutes for the Moose. They're off to 2-0.
Do it right now. You start your new show after the...
Do it right now if you want. You got 1 minute. You got 1 minute and 15 seconds you can talk about the Moose.
Okay. Well, I'm excited for the Moose season this year. No, I mean, your grandpa obviously wants us to talk about them, and there's a few things there to be excited about. They've got two young goalies, Eddie Lack, Tyler Wyman, who, you know, by all accounts are probably going to be maybe not splitting the games, but two capable goaltenders, and they started off 2-0.
Are you going to be at the home opener on Friday?
I don't have tickets, but I don't.
The team's going to be better because Vancouver's better, and because Vancouver's better, they signed a lot of guys like Joel Perreault and all those guys.
Sounds like they have a lot of offensive talent. Jonas Anderson, Shirikov again. I think the Hockey News actually had them winning
number
the
two,
had them winning,
winning,
the,
the,
yeah, winning the
Calder Cup.
Them winning the Calder Cup or winning
they
the Western
and,
Conference.
You know, I mean, for us to elaborate on the team, we don't know enough about.
They're
going to
have a good team this year.
I'll tell you, I would be very happy for the Moose to win the Calder Cup this year, and then for the Jets to return next year.
That'd be great. The Moose organization is the
top
best
notch.
Run in the AHL.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Top
so, like,
notch.
But for us to go on and on about them, we don't know enough about this team.
It is important to note that for people in Winnipeg, they are by far the best AHL
organization. It's
an NHL organization.
It's an NHL organization, and players know that, and that's why people want to come here.
Exactly. Let's leave it there. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're debuting a new segment, and Ezzy is debuting a new all-Ezzy team. We'll leave it at that. Who knows what's to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. One hour down, 1 hour to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show here on 92.9 KICK FM. My name is Drew Mandel. I'm the host of this program. Joined in studio by Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and the operator of the R-Desk, Michael Remus. Time for a score update. Let's start tonight in Washington, where the New York Islanders and the Washington Capitals are currently deadlocked at one goal apiece.
Islanders' first goal was scored by Nino Niederreiter, rookie drafted this year, assisted by Doug Weight and the newly acquired Michael Grabner. The Capitals answered back with Alex Ovechkin getting his fourth of the year ready, and that goal was assisted by Nicklas Backstrom, his first point of the season.
You have him in your fantasy draft, don't you?
I do.
Okay, just pointing that out. In Buffalo, this will be a quick one. New Jersey 0, Buffalo 0, hearkening back to the days of Hasek versus Brodeur, 10 minutes to go in the third period.
Exactly.
In Pittsburgh right now, this could be a very fluid update. It's Toronto 4, Pittsburgh 2, late in the second period, so a potential upset brewing, but the Penguins are about to take a penalty shot.
Yeah, it will be a fluid update. The first goal scored by Colton Norris, assisted by Luke Shen and Mike Brown. It's the fourth line there, if you didn't catch that. Chris Kunitz answered back with a power play goal.
I thought that was their second line.
Assisted by Evgeny Malkin, Alex Goligoski. And the Pittsburgh took the lead before the end of the first period. Maxime Talbot with his first of the year, assisted by Matt Cook and Tyler Kennedy. That's their third line there. Second period's been all Toronto, guys. Clark MacArthur, power play goal from Caberle and Phaneuf. Francois Beauchemin scored from Shen and Zygomatis. And then MacArthur again. From Grabowski and Kuhlman. That's the second line there in Toronto. So there, Toronto is up 4-2, and
yeah, it's 4-2. Malkin missed on the penalty shot.
So 4-2, still there. That's another upset, or is Pittsburgh just an awful team right now?
In La Belle Provence tonight, the home opener for the Montreal Canadiens, Tampa Bay 1, Montreal 2. 10 minutes to go in the second period.
Carey Price stealing the show here, guys. Maxime Lapierre is the one who got the Habs off the tonight. Got a first goal 5 minutes into the game. Thomas Pekanik gave him a 2-0 lead. Scored a goal from Mike Camilleri and Jaroslav Spatrick. The Lightning have answered back since the second period started. Brett Clark scored unassisted. However, the shots in this game are what we need to note. The Lightning have 27 shots halfway through the game. Carey Price has been apparently standing on his head. Montreal only has 14 shots. So the Lightning are doubling them up in shots, but the Habs are doubling up the score.
So you don't think they're booing him tonight?
Well, the way he's played in Pittsburgh again, the way he's playing now, they're going to be raising his number in the stands.
Late in the first period in Chicago, the Nashville Predators and the Chicago Blackhawks are tied up at one goal apiece.
Patrick Kane from Taves and Sharp started off. Steve Sullivan answered back from Cal O'Reilly and Ryan Suter.
And still to come tonight, the doubleheader game in Anaheim, Vancouver at Anaheim, where hopefully Anaheim won't give up 80 shots in this game.
You have to think, you know, Randy Carlyle had a little talking to the team yesterday. There's a lot of young leadership there, guys. Getzlaf, Perry, and Ryan haven't got on the board, really, in terms of scoring. And that team, that line needs to get going, mainly because the team's hopes ride on them, but also because Getzlaf's not the captain, guys. He needs to keep his composure. The team needs to have more discipline. I realize they were frustrated, and they were fighting a lot. But there's a lot of talent there. And I realize they have some defensive problems right now because Ludeman's injury and Sutton's now injured. But their defense, when healthy, isn't that bad. It's bad. but it's not as bad as they played. Hiller's a very good goalie, and they have some guys who can score up front. So
we're going to talk about them. We're going to talk about the Ducks. But before we talk about them, that's next segment in NHL News Notes. It's time for a new segment here on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. Six things I learned this week.
Six things we've learned this week.
Wow. Remus, well done. Excellent new audio. First time we've heard that.
That's good.
Let's start with Richard Pollock. The first thing that Richard has learned this week, Dustin Byfuglien's transition back to defense is a work in progress.
It's a work in progress, Drew. I've watched Dustin Byfuglien play the first few games, and Dustin Byfuglien has a lot of natural talent. Harnessing that's an issue, but he's moved back to defense, playing primarily with Tobias Enstrom, that probably Atlanta's best all-around defenseman. But his startup back there has been a little bit back and forth so far, and using that term. You watch him, he jumps into the play sometimes when he shouldn't and leaves his defenseman solo on the back end, or he'll make a misread and he'll pinch back behind the net when there's already a defenseman back there, or he'll make another pinch when he shouldn't. Right now, his passing skills and strength, obviously, and skating is an asset once in full gear. But for the time being, he is making a lot of mental mistakes on defense. And I wonder if this is something that's a learning curve for Byfuglien, although he's played defense a lot in his career, if this is a learning curve for Byfuglien, or if Atlanta, looking at the roster, saying, we don't have that much scoring up front, and we're pretty strong on the back end, will say, you know what, we'd rather not deal with Byfuglien's mistakes in the back end, and he could be an asset up front. Maybe that's somewhere where we should put him.
So like you said, it's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress right now.
Ezzy, Devils forward Ilya Kovalchuk should be on his natural left wing and should not be playing with Parise and Zajac. What do you suggest?
I suggest that Ilya Kovalchuk should definitely not be playing with Parise and Zajac, who have clearly established themselves as a duo. And along with Langenbrunner, they usually make a pretty good trio. But Ilya Kovalchuk cannot be playing any other position than left wing. He's a right-handed shot. He's always been a left winger. The thing that Kovalchuk loves to do the most is come down that left wing, cut into the center, along with his little curl
That's
back
right.
that he does.
Right.
But he's a fantastic skater. Ilya Kovalchuk, I mean, he has 3 points in the first three games. That doesn't matter. The team's been terrible. They got absolutely embarrassed by the Capitals. And like I said, I haven't even watched a game yet. But I know that when I look at the lines and see that Ilya Kovalchuk isn't playing on left wing and he isn't playing with who he should be playing with, which right now isn't actually established. Last year when he came into New Jersey, they had him with Eliáš and everything was working well. But once again, Eliáš isn't in a natural position when he's playing with Kovalchuk. So Kovalchuk needs to be on the second line on left wing, and John McClain has to just stick with him and if the team is struggling, he has to switch other players, not Kovalchuk. Usually it's not Kovalchuk that's the problem.
Richard, Mike Komisarek is getting paid $4.5 million to be the Leafs' fifth defenseman.
That's the second thing I put on the list here this week, Drew, and that's the truth. Right now their top pairing, in my mind, is, well, it depends. You can argue both ways, but probably Caberle and Schenn, what they want. That's their top pairing. Their second pairing, you know, 1A, 1B, or 2A, 2B, is Dion Phaneuf and Francois Beauchemin. And so Komisarek right now is logging time as the right defenseman on the Toronto's third pairing with Carl Gunnarsson. He's making $4.5 million a year, Drew. And, I mean, for all that's been written about Thomas Caberle and the need to get rid of him, I will say this. Thomas Caberle, in my opinion, is the best defenseman on that team. Trading him would be, in my opinion, a colossal error. He is the best defenseman. He transitions the puck well. He is the reason that power play was looking pretty good the past, the first few games. He can skate, and his defensively is not amazing, but he has good hockey sense. He can get in the way. He's a terrific passer out of the zone. He's an asset. Now, I talk about Caberle because Komisarek and Caberle are essentially, their fates on the team are intertwined. If Caberle gets dealt, Komisarek moves into the top four. Right now, he hasn't played his way into the top four. So is he a top four defenseman on a team? The Leafs have a lot of defensemen.
They're paying him like
so
he is.
He's a fifth defenseman right now. Contract isn't looking so good. You're playing him against, the other team's probably, second or third lines. And you play him some penalty kill. But he's playing with Carl Gunnarsson, who's not the best defenseman. Believe me, he's not a great defenseman. He's their sixth. But $4.5 million for a fifth defenseman. I give credit to Ron Wilson for playing him there, because that's right now where he deserves to be. However, you have to hold Brian Burke accountable for right now what appears to be a terrible contract.
Well, don't worry about it. They're paying about $3.5 million for a guy who's now in the waiver in the minors.
That wasn't Brian Burke.
I know that was Cliff Fletcher. Ezzy, the quality of the game between the Avalanche and Red Wings from last night indicates that we may see a renewal of their infamous rivalry from the mid-1990s.
I hope we see a renewal of this rivalry because that was the best rivalry, I think, in hockey. For that decade. In the 90s, that was the best rivalry.
The most heated rivalry, certainly, absolutely.
Right, and last night's game was really good. Brandon Yip got the shootout winner there.
Yeah, I watched a bit of that game, and it was a terrific game.
It was a good game, and early on in the season, obviously, it's to be expected that you don't see, classic NHL games, but that was a great game, and it was back and forth, and, I actually thought Detroit played better, but, Colorado, I know in our season preview show last week, I was saying that I think Colorado is probably going to slip out of the playoffs, but, they're well coached.
They are well coached. And
they've got a lot of young talent. Even without Mueller, I was thinking he was... But, these guys like David Jones and Gagliardi, they're good players. And they're young players in their second year now. Brandon Yip, too, and Duchesne. And they've got foot and hand, and they've got experience on the back end. Anderson's, He gives you the same performance every night. But it looks like these games are going to be good because Colorado. I think I was a little bit mistaken. I don't know if this team is going to fall off that much from last year, but the way they played and there was a fight. Doug Janik, who did he fight? McLeod.
Cody McLeod. Yeah.
So there was a fight. There was some rough stuff, but there was a lot of physical play. And, I think that watching that game, made me think of how good that rivalry is.
The Avalanche are the young pups, and the Red Wings are the big dogs. So, the young pup has always got to try and knock off the big dog to take over the yard.
Yeah. Ezzy's on track there because Colorado impressed me last night, too.
Yeah.
Sticking in Colorado, a few players in the NHL have the size and speed combination of Chris Stewart.
That was my third point. Could have been my first point. That's the first one I thought of. You don't hear a lot about Chris Stewart. You don't hear a lot about Colorado in general. We're going to give them their time right now, and we got to really watch them. I've got to watch them play the past few games. There aren't many players in the National Hockey League right now, guys, who have the size and speed of Chris Stewart. And you watch him skate down the ice. He can get there quick, but he's big and he covers a lot of ground. And so when a guy can skate like him and has the reach and size like him and is strong along the boards and will go to the net, we haven't seen a guy like that in a long time. And if he played in Toronto, or if he played in Montreal, or if he played for the Rangers, we wouldn't hear the end of him. But we haven't heard anything about this guy. We talked a bit about him a couple of weeks ago. But let's give him his due right now.
Yep.
If he can put the puck on net again, like he did last year, I think, will be a stepping board for his career. Because the talent is there, the drive is there, the competitive willingness is there, and the talent with him, being Paul Stastny, is there. Yep. I like the pieces falling in place for that first line. And Milan Hayduk being the other winger on that line, I think this Colorado team, on the back of its younger players, combined with the veteran influence there and the coaching, as Eddie just pointed out, could bode well.
John Michael Lyles is leading the league and tied for the league lead in points right now. He looks good.
He looked good on the power play.
Let me follow up a bit on that Chris Stewart point. For our listeners, if you had to compare him to a player, in the last 10 years, who does he most remind you of?
It's a good question. I was thinking about it as I was saying, maybe a Billy Guerin, but he's bigger than Billy Guerin. Billy Guerin back when he in his prime, Billy Guerin could skate, guys, and he was a scorer first, which is Chris Stewart is, and he could skate. A bigger Billy Guerin?
Is he a Todd Bertuzzi who can skate?
Different player. But I understand your idea going to the net and stuff like that. Different player. Bertuzzi's more handsy. Stewart's more shoot the puck, go to the net, kind of put the... But a combination of Billy Guerin. I don't want to go in the Cam Neely range. You don't ever want to go in the Cam Neely range. But a combination of the Billy Guerin with 30 pounds and 2 inches.
Okay. For the final one, Ezzy, this isn't really things you've learned. But
you don't know anything about this one yet, Andrew.
I guess it's something new that you're about to know.
Unveil it!
Okay. Another team that you're unveiling for our listeners.
Okay, this just happened to work out perfectly for Richie's new segment here, but... Okay, so I'm going to introduce my all-occupation team. There's actually...
Let me just say that slower again. All-occupation team.
Right, and the thing with this team is... Everyone on this team, their last name is an occupation as well.
In case you missed it earlier, a couple weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago now, Ezzy unveiled the all-food team.
Right.
So this is the everyone's sibling last name was to the all-food team. This is the all-occupation team.
Okay, so the all-occupation team. Goaltender, we have a current goaltender, Ryan Miller of the Buffalo Sabres, operating a mill. That's what a miller does, machinery. On defense, we have Garth Butcher of the Vancouver Canucks.
Blues.
Most famous Vancouver Canucks. And his fellow defenseman will be Bruce Driver, who played for the New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers back in the day. And once again, if you have any problems with any of these, if you don't think
three,
those are three, but once again, these ones are a little bit debatable whether or not they're occupations or not.
At Illegal Curve on Twitter and illegalcurve.com on Facebook.
Yeah, but and if anyone out there wants to throw in anybody that they know that would fit on this team, by all means, call us.
And if you want to add Ezra on Twitter, you can be his 3,100th follower very shortly.
Okay, so we've got our defensemen, Miller, Butcher, and Driver on forward, or at forward. Trent Hunter of the New York Islanders.
Yeah, that's good.
Matt Cook of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And this one's a little bit old school. Bobby Carpenter, who is a former assistant coach with the New Jersey Devils.
He's been playing for the Devils for years.
Didn't he play for the Jets also?
No, Bobby Carpenter, no. Dave Christian played for the Jets.
Capitals, I have it written down here. Capitals, Rangers, Kings, Bruins, Devils.
He might have. He was a scorer back
then. I've got some extras here. I've actually had another.
Oh, you got a second line.
He's got a bench.
I don't have a second team.
35 seconds, Eddie.
Okay, I've got Mike Fisher.
I like it.
Okay, Eric Brewer.
Ooh.
Okay, and Jamie Baker.
Oh!
Okay.
He's got a second line
there.
That's my all-occupation team. So once again, you know, if anybody out there on Twitter or driving in their car right now has anybody else, call us and we'll add it to the team.
So long as they're not in the car with Bruce Driver, then we should be okay.
Right.
I can't top that. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. In the evening, we're back on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. And in case you missed it, follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That is where Ezzy's all occupation team will be posted for all eternity. And hopefully, Ezzy will have more all blank teams later on throughout the season here on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. My name is Drew Mundell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. We have Michael Remus operating the R desk. It's time for NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
Starting tonight's news and notes segment in Boston, where the Bruins made two signings of players that currently under contract. Zdeno Chara re-upped with the Bruins, a 7-year extension worth $45.5 million. And while the team was over in Prague, I believe, center Patrice Bergeron signed a 3-year, $15 million contract extension. I'll throw it open. Richard, you go first. Your thoughts on both of these contract signings.
Well, the Bergeron contract really an extension of his former contract, being that it's the same price, $5 million. He's 24 years old, guys, 24, 25 years old. Great faceoff guy, good center on a, you know, maybe a second-line center on a really good team, first-line center on a pretty, you know, an okay team. I don't have as much issue with the Patrice Bergeron contract. I mean, there is some risk they're incurring because of his concussion.
Do you have any
concussion pass? They are, but it's a 3-year deal, Drew. So it's not, you know, it's not one of these 10-year deals with a guy with a concussion history. I really don't have a problem with that contract. I mean, he contributes in a lot of ways. He's pretty good defensively. He's a good passer. He's not a great sniper, but he's got hands, you know, in close if he needs to. And obviously, their depth in the middle with him and Krejci and Sagan moving forward is terrific. And the fact is, you know, they signed him for 3 extra years. I mean, Sagan comes up for a second contract, you know, the year before his contract expires. It gives him a lot of flexibility. So I like the way they structured that. The Chara one gets me a bit, and I've gone on the show about the long-term deal, but Chara's 33 years old, guys. Is there a need for a 7-year contract here? Like, is there a need for a 7-year contract?
Well, no. from Chara's perspective, there is, but from the Bruins' perspective, no.
I mean, did he really have him over a barrel? Did he really think that, you know, did they really think that he was going to go elsewhere and sign somewhere for way more money than that? I mean, he wasn't going to get more money than that, in my opinion, so was term an issue? I mean, you give him 8.5 the next year, guys, 6 the year after, 8 the year after, this is courtesy of NHL numbers, 8 the year after that, 7. I mean, he's going to get 7 when he's 38 years old. And the cap, it's going to be.
Now, isn't this
the cap? It's going to be what? The cap is going to be, I think, 7.
But I think it's not because doesn't this fall under the new rule?
No,
with
the last
AAV?
Year of the deal was a $4 million, and the other 6 years are under different cap.
Okay, so the first part of the contract works out to an average of the 7 years.
That's right.
But the last contract, because he's what over? What's the rule
over
now?
40.
If you're over 40, it's whatever you're actually getting paid that year.
You know, guys, they talked a bit about it on the Hot Stove on Saturday. Again, give him a 4-year deal. Give him his big money. Pay him until he's 37. Chara is not like Nicholas Lidstrom. First of all, he's not as good of a player as Lidstrom. But second of all, he's not as offensively talented, although he does move the puck pretty well. But the biggest thing, guys, is defensemen. I mean, defensemen age better than forwards. But, and I realize that he has a long reach and he's a big guy, so he'll be able to kind of keep that going. He's a physical player, though.
Yeah.
And physical players, unlike Lidstrom's and guys like that, I mean, you know, they wear down.
Yeah.
And you know, the game is pretty easy.
Every hit you take
pretty easy for
takes an effect.
But the game's not as easy for him for a guy like Pronger. So he's 33 years old. I mean, Pronger got kind of a similar deal, but he's 33 years old. They give him a lot of money. Boston gives their players a lot of money. And we've talked about it on the show before. Seidenberg, you know, they gave Andrew Ferentz a fair amount of money for the role he plays. It might be one of those situations where you've given all these guys money, you got to pay your best player, and you got to lock them up and see what they can do. But you give Thomas money, you give Savard money, you give Char money. I feel like Boston Bruins and Peter Chiarelli, he's a smart guy, and the team organization's working in the right direction, absolutely. But I feel like he sometimes might pay players when they're past their prime, and it comes back to haunt him a bit. Like the Savard one and the Thomas one already have. In 2 years, guys, it's similar to this, even less than 2 years, the Thomas and Savard contracts have become a bad one. If you look at the contract in Chara, if it becomes a bad contract in 2 years and he's not playing up to that level, well,
he's got
five years left.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have signed it myself. I don't really necessarily – I mean, the upside's keeping him, but I don't necessarily see him outperforming the contract.
No, I think they paid about the maximum.
Right.
And I'm not sure why they paid the maximum. You know, sometimes you overpay a guy to hold on to his, you know, first few years of free agency.
Right, that's right.
You know, when he's a young guy, you overpay him, you know, on his first sort of contract where he was eligible for free agency.
And people will come back, Drew, and they'll say, hey, in Claude Julien's defense first system with – Chara playing 25 minutes a game, power play, penalty kill, you can't really run a team like that without him. I would say, yeah, he's very important, but you're pretty loaded up front in terms of talent, especially up the middle. You have a very good goaltender.
Yeah, isn't exactly a trap team here.
Well, the thing is, but you are a system-based coach, someone as he, so the defenseman very much, you know, Jacques Lemaire's system didn't exactly count on Zdeno Chara's in Minnesota. You can play not saying Julien and Lemaire are the exact same coach, but you can plug in some defenseman there that can log big minutes for less than that. So I didn't love it. What did you think?
I don't love it either. I mean, I don't particularly like it either. I mean, I don't think Chara is talented offensively enough to warrant $7 or $8 million. I mean, I honestly think Duncan Keith was overpaid a little bit, but
and I love Duncan Keith.
Duncan Keith is
his cap is five.
A top three defenseman.
His cap is five.
Right. But there. I mean, you're right. I mean, Bergeron was signed to 3 years when easily Bergeron could have asked for a 7-year contract. But I mean, Chara is 33 years old. He was one of those guys that came into his own in his late 20s after you know struggling a little bit earlier on in his career with the Senators. But he came into his own on the Senators later on.
And can we talk a little bit about the fact that, like, he's 6'9", and basketball players who are 6'9", 6'10",
yeah.
They don't age well as as the guys who are 6'6". Like,
things begin to go.
Right,
when you're that big and there's that much of a strain on your body, potentially, right. Things begin to go. Let's move on to another topic. Henrik Sedin was named the new captain of the Vancouver Canucks. Personally, I was a little surprised, thought it would be Ryan Kesler. Well, Ezzy, what did you think?
Yeah, and once again, we talked about this a lot, that we thought it was going to be Henrik Sedin or Kesler. It's funny that nobody said Daniel Sedin, but I think it's a good choice because he really took over, and especially in Daniel's absence last year, he took over offensively and really, you know, he had his best year ever, obviously, winning the Art Ross and the Hart Trophy. And I think it's a good choice. I mean, from what we've heard time and time again, is both Sedins aren't very vocal. So, I mean, Henrik Sedin is obviously going to be another one of those guys that leads by example. Gionta also is not a very loud guy. I think it's a good choice. But I mean, we don't know if the players voted it, but it seems to be just more of a safe choice.
Now, Mike Gillis was very adamant about Henrik Sedin being the right choice, and we don't know a lot about what happens in the dressing room. We know that he's pretty quiet for the most part.
Yep.
The Sedins are very big in the community there. I think that was a factor. They gave money last year, a donation of $1.5 million, yep. I forget to who. Didn't even tell the organization about it, is what I read this week. So Sedin is obviously very well thought out of both of them. In terms of the personality there, I realized, you know, it was funny because that first game was when they unveiled Sedin, and then Ryan Kesler, who would have been my pick for the captain, you know, lost his composure in the third period, took a stupid penalty. LA tied it up on that power play.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of, you know, signified maybe what Gillis was thinking when he made the decision. And then, of course, LA went on to win in
a
shootout.
There's a difference between being vocal and being irresponsible.
Having said that, the Sedins to me, and I like their game, obviously, have never been to me the playoff performers, the playoff guys that just, like, and I realize I'm not trying to be old school here.
Vancouver's almost becoming, you know, the new San Jose.
You know, and
right?
I like to pull up their numbers. The Sedins are terrific players. I just wonder when, you know, they say this, that you play your leaders and you speak with your play. I realize that, guys. But when you're playing against Chicago and you continually lose your composer, including Henrik Sedin last year, the Sedin brothers last year. I wonder if a guy who maybe more vocal, maybe less scared, like a Ryan Kessler, who won't back down. I'm not saying the Sedins back down, but Ryan Kessler doesn't back down.
But the truth,
no matter what,
Ryan Kessler can contribute in other ways besides on the score sheet. You know, if he's the captain and they're in the playoffs, you know, he'll go out there and he'll lay a body on somebody. He'll do something to assume his captaincy. Whereas if the Sedins, if they're not producing on the score sheet, and if they're not putting the puck in the net, that's really what their game is based upon. That's what the team relies on them for, is scoring.
I don't mind the pick, obviously. Henry Sedin has a great resume. But to me, I personally would have selected Ryan Kessler. I think Ryan Kessler would have provided a more all-around captain there because he's better defensively than they are. He can get down. He's more physical. You know what? I just think, like, you watch. Let me point this out. You watch Team Canada play in the Olympics, and you guys all remember this. Everybody remembers this. And they interviewed Ryan Kessler after the second period, and he talked about how U.S. was outplaying Canada. Luongo looked shaky. Now, if you had watched the game, the U.S. hadn't outplayed Canada, but Luongo did look a little shaky. Now, it was his teammate during the season, so it caused some problems. But it was that, you know, he looked so determined to win, and he saw things maybe a different way, but seeing things a different way, maybe a skewed version, in the locker room to make your teammates feel better about themselves is generally, us against the world, is generally the way teams need to feel. I kind of felt like that was a moment, like, that guy should be the captain of a team. And so it's hard to express sometimes, but to me, he was my captain. No problems with the Deans, but I would have picked Ryan Kessler.
The Anaheim Ducks signed unrestricted free agent defenseman Andreas Lilja. They lost defenseman Andy Sutton out 6 to 8 weeks. Their defenses look to be in shambles at the beginning of the season. Yeah. They're giving up about 50 shots a game. Let's talk about the Ducks' defense.
Ooh, 50 shots a game, yeah. Well, their defense didn't look good in that game against St. Louis that they lost 5-1.
Oh, God.
They kind of resorted to the rough stuff. But, Lilja, they're bringing Lilja in, who wasn't for some reason picked up, maybe because of salary.
He was in San Jose. He was released from San Jose.
Oh, did San Jose pick him up off of...
He was in San Jose during training camp.
Because he turned down $1 million from Detroit.
Yeah, he turned down...
And San Jose picked him up. San Jose didn't have room for him, which says something, because San Jose's defense isn't anything to write home about this year, talking about the contenders. I'll say this. Well, first of all, Lilja signed, but because of the visa problems, he may not play till the weekend or early next week, which is a problem because he has to go back to Canada, get things figured out,
blah, blah, blah.
They have a couple of problems here. Well, first off, their offensive players aren't playing very good defensively. That's the first thing. Second of all, their defense on paper and on the ice is terrible. They really miss Tony Ludman. They signed him. He has unfortunate case right now, double vision, which is scary.
Yeah.
But he
doesn't have a reported concussion or anything.
Right. That's a worry. Sutton was there to be maybe a third or fourth on the team that really needed him to be, even though he's not
good
really capable of that.
A guy who will block shots, he'll get in the way, he's huge,
he gets injured. So, I mean, ideally, guys, you want your first defenseman to be Vishnovsky and your second defenseman to be Ludman and maybe be a pairing. And then your third defenseman, your fourth defenseman, you know, you throw in Mara or Sheldon Brookbank. That's the problem, guys. Third or fourth defenseman aren't very good. Lilja is going to be a nice fifth or sixth defenseman on the team, but he's probably going to have to play a bigger role than that. Right now, this team, I'm telling you, right now this team on paper does not have enough talent on defense. We talked about Dan Wood weeks ago about how they didn't have enough talent on defense and need to address it. They haven't addressed it. They need talent on defense. Second of all, they need to be more disciplined because without that talent on defense comes the fact that you don't have as many good penalty killers like Pronger and Niedermeyer. And without that, more power play goals go in. Right. You need to be more disciplined. There's three things you need to do. Be more disciplined, add talent on the back end, and play a more defensive system because your team does not have Hall of Famers in the back end to bail you out time after time.
Let me ask you, two of those three things, though, do not sound like a Randy Carlyle team.
The defensive system, I mean, his team's paid attention to detail defensively, but maybe need to more so. The discipline, yes. Discipline has been a huge problem. Mm-hmm. And their best players are Getzlaf, Perry, Ryan. Best line in hockey, in my opinion, if it gets going. The problem, of course, is that they're playing too much on their own end. And this is a classic case, guys. We talked about it many times in the show. Ottawa, similar situation a few years ago. They had, you know, their defense going to the finals was Chara, it was Redden and Zaros was one pairing. Phillips and Volchenko was another pairing, and Corvo and Pricing was another pairing. And the puck was getting into the right places, right? Puck behind the net, out to the players who scored, especially Spezza, Alfredson, Heatley. You point to that. Well, with Niedermeyer and Pronger, the puck gets into their own end, and then got to Getzlaff, got to Slaney, got to McDonald back in those, you know, back in those days. Now the puck goes into their own end, and if not for Vasnovsky, it probably stays there.
Yeah.
Try and be a forward playing in that system. You never get the puck. You never get the puck in good in proper places. And breakouts are screwed up. Your neutral zone speed slows down. Your puck's in the own end, and the puck's in the other team's end, and it's right back out. It's a team effort, and that you need to support your teammates. And I'm talking support in terms of positioning.
Yeah. Not support the rah-rah,
right.
But support in your own zone.
And that's a coaching issue. And it's not on Carlisle. Carlisle's been dealt a bad team right here. He needs to coach to the talent of the team as opposed to coaching into the system that he's used to.
Yeah, they need to play a more defensive style to make up for the defensive shortcomings.
Coach to the roster, right?
In Detroit, they re-signed head coach Mike Babcock to a 4-year contract extension, and the day after they lost Brian Rafalski for 3 to 4 weeks after he underwent arthroscopic knee surgery. The two events aren't really linked to each other, but your thoughts on both of them.
I just figured I'd talk about Detroit in this.
Well, no, I mean, this is NHL news and notes, we bring all of
them. They're both
NHL
news and notes,
news
exactly.
And notes.
Yeah, so, I mean, why wouldn't they sign Babcock to 4 years?
Seems
it's
a no-brainer.
I don't think anybody here would be, talking about Chara signing for 7 years. Signing a coach to 7 years is probably unheard of, actually. But
yeah, you don't want to do that.
Four years is a good
extension.
Well,
the only thought that I might have had, or somebody suggested, does he want to run his own? Does he want to run his own show? Does he want to be the era of the head coach general manager is sort of past us. Is he happy just being a head coach of the players that are put?
That
in
era
of
doesn't exist anymore. First of all, second of all, you're going to leave the best GM, and you're going to
I'm saying some
Babcock's
people,
on egomaniac.
Some people
like that.
Suggested that Babcock wants to win, and this. I mean, he's going to win with this lineup. Sorry, go ahead, Ezzy.
Yeah, and Mikey Babcock, the Red Wings are off to a 2-0 start this year. He got them through a really tough time last year. But, he's the best coach in Canada, maybe the world.
In the world, I think, right now.
And, this is something that obviously they were working on, in the summer, and they made the announcement, and it's great because he does an awesome job there, and the way he manages players and watching Detroit, Colorado. I mean, Detroit looked very, very good. Colorado also looked very good.
Yeah.
But Babcock does an amazing job of rolling out lines and managing ice time and
absolutely.
He's very tough on his players. Just like Scotty Bowman was
very
tough.
He's very
but
hard
Mike
on his
Babcock.
Players, yeah.
I mean, he's almost like a Brent Sutter in that he doesn't let you enjoy too much of a good thing. I mean, he's always thinking of ways to get his players better, and the Detroit made the best decision they ever made, really, when they got him from the Ducks. So
there's no resting on your laurels with him. You're exactly right, Izzy. You nailed everything about the way Babcock coaches. He is the players respect him. I'm not sure if they love him, but he coaches. He matchups. He coaches situations. He puts players in the best position to succeed. He demands a lot of his players. He is very prepared. He's very attention to detail. He knows how to get them going, and he knows. The thing about him that I respect the most is he knows his team. Remember last year against San Jose, he knew they were wearing down. Didn't press it, just let him play, and took it back, took a step back, and said, we didn't win this year, but we were tired. We were tired. We'll come back next year. Not unrealistic expectations. Not always yelling at the guys. If he's yelling at the guys, he's yelling at them to do a certain thing, not just yelling at them to yell at them. And I think that he is very attuned to the player of this day and age. And he coaches how you have to coach. You have to manage personalities first and foremost, because if you don't have their respect in terms of how you manage them personally, you're not going to listen to you. But second of all, he has attention to detail, and he's strategic. In this day and age, you can't say, go, try your hardest. That doesn't work.
What about the loss of Rafalski? What does it mean for the blue line?
It hurts their puck movement in the back end, and it'll hurt their power play a bit. But overall, Cromwell's a very capable power play guy. They have other players who can step up. And eat those minutes. They need to see maturity from Erickson, obviously. Jacob Kindle, they have as a guy capable. The Red Wings always have teams that have 7 defensemen who can play in the NHL, and they only play 6. So, while it's a step down, obviously, from Rafalski, it's not a huge step down, and they have so much depth offensively and the way they play in the other team's zone all the time. I don't think it hurts them as much as people may think.
It's another thing with the Red Wings. It seems like if an injury comes to Rafalski, a lot of times... their absence is overstated and keeps focus on too much. Doug Janik is a journeyman defenseman.
Yep.
He didn't look that bad on that team. It's not like yesterday, it was like this team isn't the same team without Rafalski.
Right.
I think there's certain teams that it doesn't matter if one or two guys is out of the lineup. Last year they had 5 or 6 guys out of the lineup.
They still made the playoffs and they still were dangerous.
This year, they're one of the top teams again.
And the truth is, Drew, we're going to break it. The truth is, veteran players missing some time during the season doesn't necessarily hurt down the road.
That's right. Let's leave it there. When we come back, everyone's favorite segment, Rapid Fire, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show, 8:41 and 30 seconds here in the one final segment here on this Wednesday night. We were just saying off air, this show has really flown by compared to last week's show, the 3.5 hour wow. marathon edition, which also went quickly, but this show really seems like it was a blink of an eye.
Exactly.
Anyways, speaking of things that are quite fast, it's time for Rapid Fire.
You ready for Rapid Fire?
It's all about the predictions.
The Vancouver Canucks Western Conference Champions Eastern Conference. I have Washington here. Now, it's not going to be easy.
LA is going to take that next step. I have the Lightning as the runner-up.
Craig Ramsey here in Atlanta.
Pittsburgh Penguins
beating the Canucks.
Top offense in the league.
Boston Bruins beating the Detroit Red Wings.
Zach Parise.
Daniel Sedin.
Rapid Fire.
The Vezina Trophy.
I got Luongo.
Miller in a repeat.
Pekarin.
The Los Angeles Kings is my Stanley Cup champion.
Rapid Fire.
I have Jordan Eberle.
Taylor Hall.
Pretty talented goaltender in Andrej Pavlik.
John Carlson from the Capitals. He just looks like a stud.
That's amazing.
Oh, he's been rolling so far, Drew.
Yeah, I know. He has looked like a stud to start. Sort of awkward segue there, mentioning Andrej Pavlich. He's at home. He's been released from hospital, and he's resting comfortably at home, according to reports. While there's good news in regards to this situation, it certainly was frightening. What is the most frightening on-ice experience you can remember seeing in person or on television?
Well, it has to be the... I'm forgetting his name now.
Richard Zednik.
Clint Malarchuk.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about recent.
The Zednik one was
anything
bad.
That you can remember.
The Zednik one was bad, but seeing the highlights of the Malarchuk one, like the blood everywhere and pouring out, I mean, that was the scariest one by far. Yeah. And I don't think anything, I think everything pales in comparison to that one. I mean, the Zednik one's probably close, but just frightening.
Ezzy?
Sorry, I'd interrupt Ezzy. The Fisher one was awful, too. When he passed on the.
In Detroit. Yuri Fisher, you're talking about.
Yeah. All awful things.
That was
a depressing question.
Sorry, that's why I sort of started.
It is a little bit of a depressing question.
It's a relevant question. It was a scary incident that happened on the ice, and we're glad that he's...
We're throwing you right under the bus.
Yes, really. It doesn't take you long at all. But we're thrilled that he's at home, and seems like it was just sort of a bizarre situation.
And nerves and stuff like that.
Fainting spell or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think he was just really excited for opening day.
Yeah, a little too excited.
Yeah.
I would have to say that the most frightening on-ice experience was probably Richard Zednik. Clint Malarchuk there was more blood, and it was a little bit worse. But
he was in.
I remember Richard Zednik when his I believe it was an artery that was cut from Chara's skate. Right? Was it Chara? Who's the defenseman?
No, it wasn't Chara. I forget.
I don't know. Remus, our desk, look that up if you can.
Okay.
But regardless, that was pretty recent, and it turns out that he came back the next year, but that was pretty scary. Hmm.
Another one you guys are forgetting about, what's it called? Hosa to Brian Berard's eye.
That was a terrible one.
Yeah, that was
a
terrible
a pretty
one,
good
also.
One.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a,
that
it's
one,
a tough
the
game.
Only problem with that one, Remus, not a problem, but the only one with that one, I remember watching that game when he swung around carelessly.
Wildly, yeah.
Was that, he might have lost his eye, which is terrible, but, the other ones, the guys' lives were in danger, which is the worrisome part.
To me, the Yuri Fisher one really takes the cake, because I can still see the video. First of all, the players all...
Next question.
Okay, we'll move on.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll move on.
Enough,
okay,
true.
Fine. Detroit Red Wings forward Kirk Maltby retired on Tuesday after 14 years in the NHL.
Never have I looked so forward to a Kirk Maltby question.
And four Stanley Cups. What will you most remember about Maltby as a player?
He was an agitator, Drew. He was annoying. I mean, he played on that line with McCarty and Draper on those great late 90s Detroit teams. That's what I remember most about him, was being an agitator, being annoying with that face, always the, why is that a penalty? Or, and I don't mind that from the back. Good players, but he wasn't that great. But he knew his role, and you have to respect him for playing his role well. And having pretty good hands for a third liner and turning himself into a very, very, very productive third line winger.
Yeah, I'll probably most remember the international grind line with McCarty and Draper. And, I mean, Maltby, four cups, I mean, that's incredible, actually. He ended up getting time with Team Canada at the World Championships, and he played in the World Cup.
Right.
Which a lot of people forgot about. I just remember Maltby as being a very, very difficult player to play against. And he had some. He wasn't known for scoring a lot of goals. I think I was looking at his numbers earlier. He never had a 20-goal season in the NHL. But Maltby was very difficult to play against and very effective in reduced minutes. I mean, he won his first two cups. He was a little bit. He got a few more points in the playoffs, but in those, you know, the 0-2 cup year and the 0-8 cup year, I mean, Maltby wasn't playing a lot, but he was still contributing and a very valuable player. But yeah, he's a grinder. He's the essence of a grinder, and he did a great job with Draper.
Question for anybody in the room. Anybody know who Edmonton traded him to Detroit for?
Joe Murphy?
No idea. No. It was Dan McGillis.
Oh, really?
But Dan McGillis actually ended up being traded by Glenn Sather for Yanni Niedema. So it actually probably worked out for both sides.
Yanni Niedema, great name. One of the all-time great names.
Pretty productive for a couple years.
The Toronto Maple Leafs placed Jeff Finger on waivers on Tuesday. He signed a four-year, $14 million deal with the Leafs in July 2008. Has there been a worse free agent signing in the post-lockout NHL?
Yes.
Oh, no, I don't think there has
Vladimir Malakhov.
That was a bad, but I mean... Vladimir Malakhov had been an NHL defenseman who can move the puck and was a big guy.
Yeah, but remember the Devils had to give the Sharks a second-round draft pick just to take him.
I know, the cap. I remember that. But Jeff Finger had hardly played in the National Hockey League. He was played a couple of games in a Colorado series. I don't even believe he played in the most important game of that series. And Cliff Fletcher turned around and gave him 4 years, $14 million. To me, there's no contract since the lockout, maybe ever, that's been that bad.
The first one came to my mind was Derek Bougard.
I realize that, but Remus, 4 years, same duration, but for less than $2 million.
How many NHL games has Jeff Finger played in the last 2 years? Maybe 40?
I don't know. I don't want to know. I'm personally offended that he got that contract.
Personally offended? Wow. Usually only I personally offend you, Richard.
That's true, Drew.
That's usually with my odor, but that's a separate issue, I suppose, altogether.
Well, tonight, especially.
Yeah, sorry about that. Hockey Night in Canada attracted record audiences for its Saturday night doubleheader. It's opening weekend, Saturday night doubleheader. The early game was up 34% from the previous record, and the late game was up 26%. In total, how many people do you think watched Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday night?
I haven't seen the ratings, which is a surprise, because I generally do check the ratings out. I know that last year, probably they're averaging about 1.2 or so for the first game, probably 800,000 to 900,000 for the second game. So, ballpark, I'll say that they hit at 1.8 on the early Saturday game, and about 1.2 for the late Saturday game.
Drew, is this a skill test?
That would be
feels
three,
like
you're
a
going
skill
with
testing
3 million,
question
3 million
here.
People.
Total.
Yeah. Total for the two games.
Yeah.
Ezzy?
I don't understand here. Are we supposed to guess?
How many people you think watched in Hockey Night in Canada in total.
Oh, okay.
I've given you that they're up significantly percentage-wise, both games.
Oh, okay.
So how many people...
By the way, surprising.
Yeah, I mean, it's
crazy
probably,
ratings
it's,
last year.
It's probably around 1.5 million, right?
Per game, you mean?
Yeah. Or, I mean...
So you're going...
Well, no, less for the...
What are you, Regis Philbin, trying to trick him into an answer?
No, less...
Just get an answer out of him.
Probably less for the second game, but I'd say, 1.5 for the first, maybe just over one for the second.
Okay.
Do you know the answer here?
Of course I know the answer. Okay, I'm not asking a question without the answer. Remus, do you want in?
Whatever Richard said.
Good. The answer turns out to be 3.681 million people. In total, watched both games.
Wow. So what were the?
I
what
think
was
it was
breakdown?
The breakdown was 2.4 and about 1.2, something along those lines.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people watched hockey on Saturday night. Let me tell you.
2.4?
It might be a little high on that.
It was Leafs Habs, I guess. I should have accounted for that spike. Regardless, I mean, no, it was Leafs Sens. It was Leafs Sens, really? That's Saturday night or Thursday?
Saturday night.
Wow. I mean that and that was a terrible game too. That's the second game was good, Vancouver LA, but yeah, I mean get. Last year, for our listeners out there who don't know, last year they came out with the people meters, which
people,
is different
for personal people meters,
PPMs, which is different than the Nielsen rating, whatever they had before in Canada, whatever it was called, and so it accounted for people, you know, before. I think what it was the issue was people, before they didn't account for like 40 people watching the game at somebody's house, right?
That's right. It now accounts for people that are watching the game together.
And so people who are always sports fans always thought, you know, the ratings should be higher than that, and now they are. So it was expected that the following year the numbers would either stay the same or around the same number or drop as it adjusted. Well, clearly that's not the case, and HNIC has to be asking for more cash now.
Well, hang on, I got the answer right here. 2.251 million people tuned in for the Toronto-Ottawa game.
Wow.
And then the late game attracted 1.4 million.
That's a huge rating for a late game.
1.4 million is
it? And with a non-Canadian team as a second.
That's right. It's not like it's a Calgary-Ottawa, a Calgary-Vancouver, or something like that. It's a lot of people.
I've said it before. I mean, since the lockout, hockey on TV and new media has become, to me, far more available and far better than it once was. I mean, people are watching games on TV way more than they used to.
Detroit Red Wings superstar forward and four-time Lady Bing Award winner for most sportsmanlike player, Pavel Datsyuk, fought Corey Perry on Friday night in Detroit.
And won that fight.
Now that we have
established... I call it a draw.
Now that we have established that Datsyuk is a goon at heart, who wins your vote for most unlikely player to have a fight this season?
It's a two-way tie, the Sedins.
Fighting each other, you mean, right?
No. They'll never fight.
That's a pretty good answer there. I don't know if I can match Ezzy on that answer. For one player who I don't think would get in a fight, you know, you can't see Mike Camilleri after he went off on Nito Niederreiter there. Timo Solani?
That's who I was thinking. The only other guy who was coming to mind was Timo. I mean, Timo's
strong,
because people know he's strong. People know he's powerful.
Yeah,
you don't mess with Timo.
That's powerful, too.
I believe I still have the Rock'em Sock'em video on tape.
Great
video.
Timo Solani, or where Don Cherry showed a segment of Timo Solani hits during when he was
big boy.
Jack. Oh yeah, he could throw the body around when he needed to.
Was one of those hits on Todd Gill?
I think
one of them was on Todd Gill. One of them might have been on Mike
Krzyzewski. If you still have a VCR, I can lend you the.
Used to battle all the time. You remember that?
Yep.
Always.
Nelson Emerson's throwing the puck in the net.
That's on the video. I have that
scoop
on the video.
Around in overtime. Classic, yeah. One nothing game against
and
Chicago,
they had
right?
video review back
no,
then.
Who they play that game?
No, St. Louis, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had
Chicago
video
was
review.
Dallas Drake, cool.
The 1-0. I was in Las Vegas when that happened. I remember watching
I was
it
at
on
the game.
ESPN. Yeah.
What are you going to be watching in Costa Rica, Drew?
Oh, yeah, the big trip.
Why is that
they have hockey in Costa Rica?
What's the name of that movie again? Where the
Weekend at Bernie's.
Vince Vaughn and they go for a couple's weekend.
Couples retreat.
Yeah, this is going to be couples retreat, Drew.
No, it won't.
Couple retreat, sorry.
It'll just be the National Lampoon's Costa Rican Adventure.
Oh, boy.
The New York Islanders drew an announced attendance of 13,351.
Have you seen their roster?
For their home opener
have
on
you
Saturday.
Seen their roster?
Let me finish the question, please. For their home opener on Saturday night against the Dallas Stars. Two days later, in a rare Columbus Day matinee against the New York Rangers, they drew only 11,748 people.
That was actually a really good game that they won 6-4.
That's also announced attendance, so you never know what the numbers truly are. How precarious is the situation on Long Island right now?
Precarious is a great word.
A great word, Drew. It's awful. I mean, I told you on the way here, the Islanders have signed a deal with, I believe, Hofstra University, one university around the area, for them to carry
Hofstra
their games.
Hofstra is on Long Island.
Yeah, for them to carry their games.
Denise, didn't you almost go to Hofstra?
What do you mean?
Did you almost go to Hofstra University?
No.
I'm just
for them to Hofstra? Carry their games. The Islanders are, Islanders are carrying their games on university radio this year.
No, it's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing.
I mean, no slight against college radio by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, this is a National Hockey League team, which needs to gross about $100 million a year, and they're putting their games on university radio.
I hear they're getting a fabulous deal in 5-cent candies at the university candy shop, though.
Yeah, and they get free tickets to the games.
So. Yeah. It's a bad situation on Long Island right now, and, I mean,
it really is.
Doesn't seem to be an end in sight there until Quebec City builds an arena. By the way, build that arena, Quebec City. The Toronto Sun published an edition of its paper that featured a front cover of Nazem Kadri with a pacifier in his mouth. The fans of the Montreal Canadiens booed their starting goalie in an exhibition game. Which of these two cities is harder to play in?
Definitely. Hold on, I know you were going to go first. Montreal.
No, go for it.
Montreal. Not even this. I mean, this. This is a terrible question, first of all. But Montreal.
You know I'm sitting here, right?
Montreal, yeah, that's a good question.
Montreal. Fans in Montreal boo the person in front of them, okay? Montreal fans are the best fans in the world. We've talked about this before. But they are the hardest because they want their play. They want to win every single night. And Carey Price, I'm pretty sure somebody was booing Carey Price for the types of shoelaces that he was wearing for the first game. So, I mean, Toronto fans are.
You want to see his number?
Toronto fans,
Snyder
Toronto
insane,
fans are
by the
tough,
way.
But I mean, Montreal fans. I mean,
there's
are
nine.
Just, are
what are his numbers? Right? How many saves?
Unforgiving.
He
oh, he just let in goals. He said.
Wouldn't you also say that Toronto's more corporate crowd?
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Exactly. I totally
you're
agree.
Quoting Squad Oak there from After Hours on the weekend.
Can't say I watched.
He dropped it twice. Pre and post show.
That's what I was going to say.
We cursed Carey Price because he let it go as we were talking.
The fans in Toronto, I think, could be just as tough. But the problem is they don't get to go to any of the games. Whereas the fans in Montreal are actual hockey fans as opposed to suits. I mean, I'll tell you.
I mean, been to games in both, not a Habs game, but a World Cup game, and been to Toronto before. The Habs are far louder fans, and they're far more passionate. And that means they're harder generally on their players.
I mean, there is nobody.
It's all about
watch the first 5 minutes after an intermission at the Air Canada Centre.
Nobody there.
There's nobody there. You would think that there was a bomb scare or something.
They're going for their pre-ordered meals, like our friend Adam Gutkin has pre-ordered meals at the ACC last Saturday.
I don't consider him a friend. Stop right there. I don't consider him a friend.
He told me this is what they do. You want to hear what they do at the ACC? You can, if you sit in a special section, which he was lucky enough to do, you can go there and they have appetizers before, and then they take your meal, your order, and they have it ready for you at the second intermission, and like desserts ready the next intermission. This is not a game. I said to him, whatever happened to popcorn and a beer? It's not a game. It's like a wine and cheese.
I once went to a game or was invited to a game and we had dinner. We had a dinner beforehand in there's a fancy restaurant, a fancy steakhouse in the basement of the ACC. And I swear the restaurant, we're in royalty. Shut up. The restaurant was full throughout the game. Nobody actually went to watch the game.
How was your steak?
I wanted to see more of the game. I was more in the mood for a beer and a
hot
dog.
Can I ask you a question, Drew?
You can, Denise.
Was the game on TV in the restaurant?
No, there were no TVs in the restaurant. That's what made it it was like a classic. It was a classy steakhouse in an arena.
Was your steak blue?
No, I don't never get blue. Medium or medium plus.
Blue cheese?
Not a big blue cheese guy, but sometimes with a big beefsteak tomato, that's okay. James Wisniewski was suspended for 2 games for a suggestion that Rangers forward Sean Avery. And we were having a debate off air about what the proper euphemism to go with this is. I'm going with go suck a lollipop.
That's fair.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
That's what I saw too.
Yeah, you definitely told him to go suck a lollipop.
Yep.
What is your favorite trash talking incident between two players?
Okay, I couldn't remember who this was, but Scott Stevens was trash talking someone. This is a long time ago. Was this 95 even?
It was Cicerelli and those guys after he hit Kozlov, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. Okay, it was Cicerelli in 95. And this wasn't even really trashed. Well, yeah, no, this was trash talking. But I mean, once again, Stevens made a gesture, and his gesture was for Cicerelli to tighten his chin strap on his helmet. If anyone remembers that series or any series that Scott Stevens was in,
oh my God,
Scott Stevens nailed people routinely coming up the
he
middle.
He did not look like he looked like a crazy person.
And actually, yeah, Richie, that now that I remember, because I mean that's 15 years ago. Wow, but I mean he nailed Kozlov.
Absolutely nailed him. Do you remember what he said though?
Yeah.
He looked down the bench with these crazy eyes.
Yeah.
He looked down at Cicerelli and I forget who else. It might have been. The late, that wasn't the proper, it was Joey Koester. Yep. And he looked down at them, pointed at them with these crazy eyes and said, "You're next."
Yeah.
And it was so crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And that's not even trash talking, but, it's close.
It was pretty good.
Remember Gretzky playing against Gretzky, big Gretzky fan, Rangers playing against the Devils in 97, and Berdura trash talked Gretzky. And I always find it funny, because you ever motivated Gretzky? I mean, remember Bob McKenzie writing that in 93 about the piano in the back? And Gretzky came down and scored and skated by Berdur and just gave him a little something. And I thought, you know, I love the game of switch between two of the best players of all time going at it. I thought that was good.
Remember, we should mention, too, Roenick and Roy.
Great
back
one.
Back in the day when Roenick trash-talked Roy before the game, and then in the media he said, "I can't hear what he's saying because my Stanley Cup rings are in my ears.
That was
a great line. One of the best responses. That was a great line. Before we move on to cheers and jeers for tonight, Remus, an update about the all-occupation team from the R-Desk?
Sure, I got a bit of an update. We had a tweet. I forget the guy's username, but he suggested Miroslav Shatan, I guess, you know, tongue-in-cheek, Satan as an occupation. And from H-Bomb in the chat room, he said, you know, Mason Raymond, Chris Mason, Steve Mason as a stonemason.
Yeah. Not bad.
So pretty funny.
That works.
And in terms of corrections, guys, it was actually Ole Jokinen's skate in Richard Zednik's neck. And if you want to know about...
His teammate.
You want to know about Jeff Fingers' statistics here. He played 39 games last year. How much? 66 the year before, 72, and then 22. So he's only played 4 seasons. He'd only played 2 seasons before he got that.
As AHL. Yeah.
One and a quarter seasons before he got that monster.
And it was a healthy scratch in the playoffs for
Game 7 or something.
For Colorado for most of those playoff games. So fine job, Cliff Fletcher. It's time for cheers and jeers.
Cheers and jeers. Cheers and jeers.
Pretty easy cheer this week. Tomorrow night is the doubleheader, Hockey Night in Canada. Come on, I've been waiting for this since the end of the season. That's the cheer. The cheer is the Hockey Night Canada, by the way, stepping up on opening night. Can't wait for that. Pumped up.
My main cheer is going to go to Pat Burns, and they're naming an arena after him in Stansted, Quebec.
I'm going to cheer, and I'm going to cheer, obviously, the start of the hockey season tomorrow. I'm very excited, and I can't wait to start tracking my fantasy players.
Cheering all the Quebec City NHL fans who came out to that rally last weekend. You know, good on them for showing their support.
Cheers and jeers.
Cheer or jeer.
Remus, we're starting with you. Cheers.
Good music
there.
Oh, yeah, that was Estelle featuring Kanye West, I believe.
Is that what you're cheering? Or
Estelle Costanza?
No, Estelle Costanza, that's exactly it.
Georgie, I'm hungry.
All I'm thinking about right now is that doll. I'm going to cheer NHL Game Center free preview and NHL Game Center. It's on NHL.com. You can watch every game. You can watch four games at a time. You can watch the home feed, the away feed. It is in great quality. It's in HD. It looks perfect. And I, as someone who has experience with the MLB TV package, I think this is far superior, $20 a month, but free. I'm loving the free preview to start the year until the 26th. Good for the NHL for offering that up.
Richard.
I'm going to give a cheer to Brian Gionta today for, you know, as he you told me before the show, he announced the starting lineups today in both French and English, and he doesn't have to do that. And he can create a controversy for the team, whether you think it's right or not. He could create a controversy for the team by not doing it or not learning French. And the fact that he's willing to do that already shows to me that he was the right decision to be the captain of the Montreal Canadiens.
Whoa. That's powerful.
That's deep.
That's deep, man.
Ezzy?
I'm going to cheer Ryan Miller.
Because he's on the all-vocation team?
No, not well, not only for that,
you
but
changed the name. All-vocation
team. Richie knew about the all-vocation
team. He said vocation before we
went
on air.
Before we went on air, I told but I changed it to all-occupation because vocation's kind of a technical word. But I'm going to cheer Ryan Miller for standing up for his teammates and his team and just for speaking his mind because
I like that,
you know what? Enough guys don't speak their mind, and I think that players like him, and we mentioned this earlier, they should start, you know, speaking their mind when something like this happens, because he felt that, Jarmelson probably should have felt a little bit worse about the hit, and maybe he was insinuating that he should get suspended longer. So good for him for sticking up for his teammates.
Great.
I'm going to be a downer on Cheers and Jeers, and I'm going to end with a jeer. And the reason why I'm jeering is the reason why I'm jeering is
your jeer cheer ratio is bad.
Yeah, you have a bad jeer cheer ratio.
I'm a realist. You guys are just optimists. I don't like that the NHL starts the year over in Europe. I think
that's last week's
and
news.
And you're anti-European.
We're
I'm not
anti-European at all. I just think we lose some of its luster. By starting in Europe. You never know when the game is going to be on. You're at work. The things are happening. It's in the middle of the day. Yeah. I want the games to start every Saturday night. I want the first game to be at 6 o'clock on Saturday night because I want everybody to be sitting around the TV waiting with anticipation for that first puck drop. I want there to be a buzz in the air wherever you are watching that game. With these games
similar
in Europe,
to the NFL, right?
Yeah.
Well, also, the NFL does it
Thursday night.
But baseball only does one game on Sunday night, too, before they start their season.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, there's got to be – you want everybody to know appointment viewing this time. You're on the air. You're going to – the puck's going to drop, and you're going to watch that game. I mean, I wouldn't have missed that Saints-Vikings game that started the NFL season for anything. I want the NHL to do the same
thing. Two words, Drew.
Yeah.
Money talks.
Yeah, quick jeer here, the Double Down Sandwich is coming to Winnipeg, and all of Canada, KFC. Props to KFC for bringing the Double Down Sandwich to our country.
Why did you just jeer it?
Yeah.
I cheered it.
You cheered it.
It sounded like a jeer.
I heard jeer.
No, I meant to say,
Well, it's clearly a cheer if you know Ezra.
It's clearly a cheer.
Yeah, I was confused.
Sounded like jeer.
Anyways, that's it for this Wednesday night here on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. A big thank you tonight to our guest, Andrew Gross from the Bergen Record in New Jersey. We talked about the Rangers to him. A big thank you to everybody who joined us in the Ustream chat room tonight. Yep. A big thank you to Denise behind the glass doing her fabulous job.
Denise, thank you, Denise.
It's good to have you back,
back
in the saddle.
Thanks.
We encourage you to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We encourage you to follow us on Facebook, illegalcurve.com. That way you can get all the latest breaking news here on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. You can find out about all the guests, everything. You'll stay in tune with what's going on when we're not on the air. Replay of this program will air tomorrow night in Brandon, Manitoba, 106.5 FM. You can, if in case you're driving through the Westman region, you can tune in on 106.5. A replay Sunday morning here on Kick FM from 10 until noon. Program is available immediately afterwards in its entirety at www.ustream.tv/illegalcurve. Of course, you can subscribe to our iTunes podcast feed and get the show in podcast form so you can listen to it at your convenience, be it when you're working out, driving in the car.
Actually caught it on a Sunday morning and sounded really good. So
that must have been one of the days where you were behind the glass doing your opping.
Yeah.
Maybe, I'm not sure.
It doesn't really matter. We'll just go with that.
Denise, you don't have to pretend that you listen to the show, I mean.
No, I mean, it was... I caught the show!
We appreciate that you come out. That's good enough. You don't have to listen to the show afterwards. It's for our hardcore fans, but...
No, I caught the show on a Sunday, and I think it was a week I opped. I don't know.
Okay, well, anyways.
But Marty listens to it habitually, just so you guys know, every Sunday.
Marty parties.
Really?
Yep.
Excellent. That's good news for everybody. So be like Denise and be like Marty and listen to the show every Sunday morning from 10 until noon. Like I was saying about iTunes, subscribe. You'll get the show, you'll get the RSS feed sent to you immediately.
Do whatever you want with it.
When it's up there, you can do whatever you want with it. Remus will take care of that. Until next Wednesday night from beautiful downtown Winnipeg and Kick FM Studios, we wish you good night and good luck.
The Illegal Curve Radio Show has been presented by Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg. Tune in again next Wednesday at 7 o'clock for more of what you love. Don't slow down.